Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. Quorum is present. Representative Dempsey moves approval of the minutes of the 66th meeting of the Tax Committee, which occurred on Friday, April 30th, 2004. As many as are in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. We're going to finish up on the public testimony, go to the revenue estimate, and then have Representative Stang talk about the DE5 amendment. First name on the list is Gladys Morton. Please identify yourself for the tape. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Gladys Morton. I'm a resident of St. Paul. And I can appreciate what a difficult decision people are going to have making this today. I did want to tell you, though, that I do support Twin Stadium in St. Paul. I live downtown. I've seen the success of the Excel Center, the opportunities, the vitality, and the excitement that has been generated by the Excel Center. It has made a significant impact on our quality of life in St. Paul. There are more options now, from restaurants to housing. There's a sense of optimism and people wanting to move here and open businesses. I look forward to and will enjoy a baseball park in my backyard. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Morton? Thank you. Next name on the list is Bob Welly. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Welly, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Welly. I live in St. Paul. I'm a commercial real estate broker. I'm here today as a fan of the game of baseball and as a taxpayer and a citizen of the great state of Minnesota. First, I want to affirm the conclusion reached by the Governor's Stadium Screening Committee that proposed that the cost of new stadiums should be paid for through a combination of team investment, fan contributions, and host community revenues. I think what the committee was envisioning is some kind of a win-win-win scenario where all of those parties gain some benefit, and this would ensure that the cost of the new stadiums would be paid for proportionately by those that benefit. In respect to the host community, I'm not sure exactly who that is, if it's a downtown area, a city, a county, a region, or the state. But in any respect, when we talk about benefits, I think we have to look for real financial cash benefits, since the obligations that are going to be created by this legislation will require actual cash outlays. Whether we can expect to see increases in real estate tax collections seems to be doubtful. Whether there will be permanent long-term jobs with wages and benefits has been called into question. And finally, we've entertained some notions that there will be increases in sales tax and income tax collections. In any respect, we have to look beyond a vague notion of quality of life, because that's something that's measured by the fans, which is the next group I want to talk about. To the fans, of course, the only benefit is to be able to see games in a new, improved facility. There are no financial benefits, only cash outlays. And I think a baseball team or football team, any business, has to start with the premise of what does the customer want. And secondly, how much is the customer willing to pay to get what the customer wants? I think in asking Twins fans, how much more money are you willing to pay to see games in a new facility, I think, first of all, we need to be sure that the new facility is an improvement over the existing facility. And something that I heard that concerns me is that the design of the new stadium, the second deck is actually 12 feet farther back and 7 feet higher from home plate at the Metrodome. So if our goal is to achieve a more fan-friendly, intimate ballpark, this information says that we're literally moving backward instead of forward. We've also heard information from stadiums built in other cities in the country that ticket prices go up anywhere between 40% and 60%. So if, in fact, the fans are going to be required to pay this kind of additional money, the fans need to be ensured that this, in fact, there will be a benefit from a better ballpark. And I think that this legislation should provide for more fan input in how this facility is designed to ensure that we actually end up with something that's better. The only party, I think, for whom the benefits, financial benefits, can really be measured is the team owner. And the team owner's made it clear that he wants a new stadium to improve his revenue stream. And in respect to the goal of the stadium screening committee of creating this win-win-win scenario, I haven't seen any action by the owner to suggest that they really share or embrace this concept. I'm reminded of the 1997 stadium finance debate when we heard of a $80 million contribution, which later actually turned out to be a loan. More recently, there's been this TIF proposal that there would be an increment of increased sales and income tax collection, which first was actually going to count as the owner's contribution to the stadium. Then it was proposed that this there would be a loan to the team and that the increment would be used to pay off the loan. And I think most recently now this increment would be used to pay off some stadium bonds. I want to address this issue of TIF, particularly in respect to sales tax collections, because right now those tax collections go into the state's general fund. And speaking now as a fan and a taxpayer, I want to see those tax, any sales tax that I pay in this new stadium TIF district, I want to see those tax revenues continue to go into the state's general fund. I think there's a couple of problems. First of all, with creating private TIF accounts where people, in effect, expect that those funds will be returned directly to them. And going back to this win-win-win scenario, if in fact there is a case to be made that there is going to be increases in sales tax collections, this would be the benefit that the host community would hope to obtain. So if we look at that as kind of a credit on the ledger sheet, if we then create another obligation over here on a different part of the ledger that's really a debit that really in effect wipes out whatever the benefit was that we were going to obtain, this suggests more of a win-lose approach to this stadium issue where one party is enriched at the expense of the other party. But I also think in respect to the general fund, with when you consider our demographics with over the next 30 years, which is what the period of time about that we're going to have to live with this, the obligations created by this legislation, is that we're going to see a lot of people retiring, going out of the workforce, and fewer workers to support a lot of retirees. And I think we've probably underestimated the demands that are going to be placed on the general fund over the next 30 years. And we may have overestimated what our tax collections will be. So I think the last thing we want to do is start setting up these private accounts for the benefit of private business. As a commercial real estate broker, I I tend to look at a stadium as just another piece of commercial real estate. It's a facility where the fans can watch a game, and it's a place where the owner strives to make money from the fans watching the game. So for the owner, it's really a sort of a profit center, and I think we need to consider some other possibilities here about how this stadium gets built and financed. To the fans, it's really just about a game, but to the owner, it's really about making money. And in some of the features that are part of this new stadium design, like luxury suites, a conference center, restaurants, they're not really that much about the game, but they're really all about the revenue stream. And I think if the owner feels that those are important components of his revenue stream, he really ought to pay to implement those things. Whatever the expected revenue is going to be, if it's not enough that the owner can justify investing his own money, that there's just not enough revenue that's going to come about, then they should probably be deleted from the stadium plans. They probably don't make economic sense. But I suspect that's why they're in there, is that they will enhance the owner's revenue stream. And I think the legislation provides for the possibility of, in effect, a commercial condominium. That's something the new stadium authority could do, is in effect sell a condominium to the owner, and then he can go ahead and build out the luxury suites and the restaurants and the conference center to enhance his revenue stream. All of these TIF ideas and financing ideas and so on remind me of what the Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw said. And that is that a government policy that robs from Peter to pay Paul can always depend on the support of Paul. And I suspect a lot of you are hearing from constituents named Paul that want you to pass some legislation that robs from Peter. And I would encourage you to avoid that and instead to look for legislation that will accomplish the goals of the Stadium Screening Committee, which is having the parties pay in proportion to their actual benefits. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Welley?
Thank you.
Tom Goldstein.
Just a comment. I don't know that I'm necessarily opposed to the idea of robbing Peter to pay Paul.
I am.
Mr. Goldstein, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the tape, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Goldstein. I am publisher of the Baseball Journal Legion Fields Quarterly, which is a fan publication that looks at the game from the fans' point of view. I appreciate the opportunity to testify again before this committee, as I have in past years. Regarding this bill, with all due respect to Representative Stang, I believe this might be one of the worst pieces of legislation to ever come before the Tax Committee as it is currently written. It is as if every possible advantage has been given the Twins with no real attempt to negotiate any cost containment provisions, no effort to restrain the design, no effort to question the Twins' lofty and erroneous claims about the necessity for a retractable roof, and little attempt to compel the Twins to put significant resources into a stadium project, as if naming rights revenue, for example, should be treated as a team asset when such monies will only be available if the state provides a mechanism for a new stadium to be built. We've heard a lot of talk about how no general fund money will be put into a stadium, that the legislature is merely providing potential host cities the opportunity to bid for a new stadium in their community as if this is some kind of win-win situation that won't come at the expense of any other project or programs. Yet what will happen when Hennepin County needs money for roads or bridges or for operating HCMC or for affordable housing and shelter services? Where will the county get the revenues for those projects if the state allows the kind of booster-driven approach to governing that seeks to appropriate monies instead for a non-revenue-generating asset like a baseball stadium? Do you folks feel any kind of responsibility to prevent this kind of recklessness from happening? We've also heard a lot of pro-stadium testimony in the past few days saying how great a Twin Stadium would be for bars and restaurants, with St. Paul businessmen such as John Wolf and Tom Reed citing the benefits that the XL Arena has brought their establishments. So, of course, these gentlemen would love to have a Twin Stadium in their downtown, since they've seen what great benefits a public investment of $130 million for the Wild Arena has brought to their bottom line. But since when did the state get in the business of subsidizing the bar and restaurant industry while the rest of the community foots the bill? Ask these men how eager they'd be to have the Twins come to St. Paul if just those dining establishments that were to get the direct benefit of a new baseball stadium had to pay the taxes to fund such a new facility. I suspect that they'd cry bloody murder. And let's talk about jobs. We hear so much about how a new stadium will bring all these jobs to the host community. And to be sure, some good temporary construction jobs will be created if new stadia are built for the Twins and Vikings. But how about in-stadium jobs? Yes, there are still vendors walking the aisles of the Metrodome, but have you noticed what's going on at all the concession stands? Every single food stand at Twins games is not staffed by paid employees, but rather operated by local nonprofits. And this is probably true at the Vikings, Wild, and Timberwolves games as well. So not only do the Twins now save significant costs in not having to pay salaries and benefits to food workers, they might even get a tax deduction for the percentage of sales that they contribute to the nonprofits in lieu of wages. It's bad enough that the state is contemplating subsidizing the $5.75 beers, the $3 pretzels, and the $4 Cokes that one pays at professional sports events. But now the state is also looking to bankroll private companies that have eliminated jobs? Why has there been no discussion about this practice in this jobless recovery where the state talks so much about job creation? I'd also like to point out that ticket prices at new stadia rise on average of 40 to 70% the first year, which has been alluded to before, and that while folks are touting the XL Energy Center as such a grand success in St. Paul, does it matter that it costs a family of four on average $242 to attend a Wild game each evening? Since when did the creating of entertainment venues for the most affluent in the state become such an important focus of the Capitol, when everywhere state agencies, schools, healthcare providers, and so on are told that they must get by with less in these lean economic times? Does it matter that attendance is plummeting at recently built stadia? That the Tigers, Brewers, and Pirates, all in brand new publicly funded stadiums, draw less than the Twins at the mediocre Metrodome? That the Twins have seen a 60% increase in attendance the past 5 years, while even the Cleveland Indians, in the highly touted Jacobs Field, now average less fans than the Twins each season? What fact does this committee need to open its eyes to the reality that the creation of a public boondoggle through this proposed funding mechanism is wrong in just about every way imaginable? You folks are bankers, businessmen and women, educators, teachers, lawyers, and realtors. Yet I've seen few tough questions put to the teams asking you for over $1 billion in subsidies. Like, for example, why the teams can't do these projects themselves. Not once have the Twins been forced to open their books so that state regulators can examine with a fine-tooth comb just how ludicrous the team's claims are of multi-million dollar losses the past decade. 3 years ago, in this committee, Representative Tim Wilkin asked the Twins to open their books, and Twins President Jerry Bell agreed to do so. To date, all Mr. Wilkin has seen is an inconclusive three-page summary statement and nothing more. Do you think that any business could come before this body providing such skimpy data and even get a hearing? And does it concern anybody that 2 years ago, Mr. Bell testified before this same committee that a retractable roof was not a deal breaker for building a new stadium, and that such a $200 million extravagance is now a requirement, even though the Twins have qualified for the playoffs in both of the past two seasons, and even though weather data that I am happy to provide this committee will show that in cities such as Boston, Chicago, and Detroit, with new stadia that do not have retractable roofs. The temperature differential is approximately 2 degrees in April and October, and there are actually less days of precipitation and less cold weather days than in the state of Minnesota. In the state of Minnesota, there are less days of precipitation and less total precipitation than in those cities that do not have retractable roofs. At my son's school in St. Paul, we recently had a $200,000 budget cut, which has led to us losing all classroom aides, and we have been waiting 7 years to have air conditioning installed in the building that was designed for air conditioning. At Harding High School in St. Paul, the roof leaks whenever it pours outside. All over Minnesota, we are seeing the defunding of programs and services, yet this legislature is once again debating whether the only state-of-art facilities we will have in the state of Minnesota 5 years from now are stadia for our pro sports teams. I could go on and on, but I am especially struck by the fact that in an era when this legislature will not raise taxes to ensure quality schools, medical care for all, affordable housing, child care, transportation, and a whole slew of other projects, this committee is now poised to allow the raising of taxes to fund sports stadia, and to do so without taxpayer approval. Some have suggested that such decisions are best left to the legislature, and that if voters don't approve, they can always vote you folks out of office this November. And maybe that will happen. Maybe some of you will lose your jobs if you allow this awful piece of legislation to become law. But all these calls and letters that the Twins may be generating to your offices don't change the obvious. The majority of taxpayers don't want publicly funded stadia, as polls have shown time and again. And if you give them the opportunity to vote for it, they will vote it down. Last week, Jim Boughton, former Major League pitcher and critic of publicly funded stadia, said that professional sports team owners should be ashamed of themselves for even coming before legislators to ask for one dime of public funding for their industries. I agree. Even more shameful is that this legislature has spent a disproportionate amount of its time the past 7 years debating the whole stadium question over and over again. So I ask that you vote this horrible, hackneyed proposal down once and for all. And the next time a Twins or Vikings lobbyist shows his or face in your office, throw them out. This has gone on long enough. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Goldstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Chuck, I don't know if it's Levin or Levine. Tom Lee. Okay. Ken Kuby. Gregor Kell. Dario Anselmo. A Conexus Energy representative. Welcome to the committee, sir, and please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Larry Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N. I'm the Vice President of Corporate Services for Conexus Energy. Conexus Energy is the electric distribution cooperative that serves the northern suburbs as far north as St. Cloud and Cambridge. I'm here this morning to speak not only on behalf of Conexus Energy, but I'm actually wearing several hats this morning. One of them is of the chair of the Anoka County Economic Development Partnership. Another is as a member of the Anoka County Ambassadors. The Anoka County Ambassadors is a group of 60 business leaders that have been formed and have been working very actively to promote development within Anoka County. Part of that activity has included radio and paper ads, luncheon rallies, including Bud Grant and the Viking officials, and you all may have seen references to that on television news broadcasts. I'd like to just take a couple of minutes this morning to talk about what the stadium would mean for the northern suburbs. It's imperative that not just the stadium, but these kinds of projects are brought to the northern metro area. For so long, that area has been ignored. And it's time to do what's right for that part of the community. And I'm not saying that as some sort of an owing, but it really works to balance the development throughout the region and make the region more vibrant. I'd also like to refer to, and I can't quote the study, but I've heard it reported, and that is to speak about the Bohemian Index, it's called. And it's kind of an interesting fact, but I think you'll hear a lot of naysayers say, well, we shouldn't have these teams. We don't need to spend a nickel on anything. When, in fact, if you want to talk about economic development, what you're talking about are attracting growing and important businesses to the community. And a lot of that, the study that I'm referring to, a lot of that was identified as being predicated on your Bohemian Index, meaning what sort of amenities does this region provide that would attract the kind of quality workers and the kind of quality jobs that we need in the area. That index is made up of not only things like the Walker Art Center and the Guthrie Theater, but it's also made up of sporting events. And that's why it's important to include the Viking stadiums and other efforts in this mix as we consider funding. And I know you've considered funding other projects, and this should be just another that is important to the base of the community. So on behalf of Conexus Energy, on behalf of the Anoka County Ambassadors, and also on behalf of the Anoka County Economic Development Partnership, I want to tell you that we are very supportive of bringing the Viking Stadium to Anoka County.
Any questions for Mr. Peterson? Thank you.
Thank you.
James Pace from St. Paul. Mr. Pace here. There he is.
Thank you, Chairman Abrams and committee members. My name is James Pace. I live on the north end of St. Paul. I'm a longtime fan of the Twins, Vikings, and Timberwolves. Just before this session began, a Star Tribune poll showed that 62% of Minnesotans surveyed were against any use of public financing to build new Twins or Viking stadiums. Time and time again, an overwhelming majority of Minnesotans have said no to using public money to subsidize the sports entertainment industry. But here we are again, spending precious public time looking for new ways to channel our scarce tax revenue to the team owners and the millionaire players. Many people in this state believe that it's simply wrong to even consider subsidizing such an incredibly lucrative industry that generates astronomical profits in the free market. The average Major League Baseball player's salary is now paid well over $2 million per year. And players like Alex Rodriguez are paid $20 million a year. Locally, Twins ace pitcher Brad Radke is being paid nearly $10 million a year. Some would like us to separate these ridiculous multi-million dollar salaries from the public handout that the team owners are demanding. But there is a direct connection, and this bill would shift public funds into private profit so team owners can pay their players even more to, quote, stay competitive. Please remember, this is about entertainment that you're proposing to fund. It's not an essential service like so many that are now truly struggling from harsh budget cuts. Anoka, Ramsey, Hennepin County need funding for education, affordable housing, nursing homes, early child development. If these counties are given any authorization to increase sales tax, that new revenue should go toward vital programs for the people who really need state help. The economics of professional sports are out of touch with reality. When average players are paid $2 and $3 million a year and our school teachers are barely making $30,000 a year, the era of community extravagance and giving in to threats of teams leaving is coming to an end. Miller Park in Milwaukee is just one of many examples of why this is bad public policy. Miller Park has been an utter failure for the community and for the taxpayers of Milwaukee, the state of Wisconsin, to the tune of $400 million, not to mention the cost overruns. In San Francisco, taxpayers and voters refused to give in to the threats of the team moving. And finally, the team found private sources to build a great stadium, pay their players millions, without draining scarce public revenue. We've had a long, hard battle here on this issue in Minnesota. Just 20 years ago, the public paid $50 million to build the Metrodome for the Twins and Vikings, and it's provided huge profits for both teams. Let's not forget that the legislature passed a stadium bill for the Twins just 2 years ago, but apparently it wasn't enough. The pro sports industry should be the very last in line for public handouts, at least until our very most basic needs are adequately addressed. This issue is a matter of quality of life, and I think we need to define what that quality of life is. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Pace? Thank you. Is Jim Campbell here yet? Oh, there he is. I'm sorry, Jim. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Campbell. Please identify yourself at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Jim Campbell, and I reside at 5521 Woodcrest Drive in Edina, Minnesota. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee for the opportunity to visit with you this morning. I am the retired chair and CEO of Norwest Wells Fargo Bank, and I'm here today representing myself and not any of the other many connections that I have in this state and the community. I'm not representing any other community organizations I'm currently involved with, including the Itasca project. I'm here today because of the collective experiences that I've had, I've accumulated over the 38 years that I spent working for Norwest Wells Fargo in major cities from the East Coast to the West Coast and in other major cities around the world. Cities and states that have prospered have set themselves apart from other communities for many reasons, but one critical reason is that they've developed community amenities such as the arts, parks, educational opportunities, and several other factors including sports. To compete, we must continue to have these attributes. Now, I'm not here this morning to be an expert on all the details of this bill. I'll leave that to you. However, I have been involved in the conversations, just as you have, on legislation for professional sports for the past 10 years. First of all, I'd like to thank Governor Plenty for his leadership in moving this legislation forward, and to thank Representative Stang for offering the bill and for all of your good efforts these last several days in taking testimony from the citizens of the state of Minnesota. Professional sports are very important to the quality of life in Minnesota. Candidly, the Metrodome is no longer adequate for the Twins, and for that matter, for the Vikings and the Gophers either. We've had this 10-year debate on what the right long-term solution should be, but we do need now to assure that the teams remain in Minnesota, but more importantly, that allow them to be competitive. The governor's proposals have many positive elements, including significant commitments from the Twins and the Vikings. The Twins' participation, as you all know, includes franchise revenue sharing, guarantee of tax increment revenues, assumption of the construction cost overrun risk, and significant free use for amateur athletics. The state needs to recognize its required role through some incremental tax use and credit support. I believe that it is vitally important that any proposal make good economic sense with as little public cost as is possible, and I believe this proposal does that. It is critical that we get this done. In the past, the financial models simply did not work, but I have to say, having looked at this one somewhat, that this one is very, very close. I do believe that the business community will continue to support these projects with the purchase of season tickets, suite, and all the other things that go along with filling the stadiums. The business community has done so in the past, and I am confident they will continue to do it in the future. To get this deal done, it must be a collaborative effort of the teams, the state, and the host community. And in that regard, I am very pleased that the host communities have done an outstanding job and truly are getting ready and are assisting the state in passing this legislation. I would suggest that you cannot include conditions in the final legislation that cannot be met or which delay construction. As a former banker, I'm almost certain that interest rates are only going to go one way, and that's up. So the construction, and so will construction costs. So my recommendation is let's get on with the projects now. Now is the time. For some of you that I know that you're aware that I grew up in Byron, Minnesota, and I remember sitting in the living room with a small black and white TV set watching my first major league, or in that case, I guess it was AAA league baseball from the Nicollet Ballpark at Lake and Nicollet, where one of the Wells Fargo banks stands today. I understand that it was 56 years ago last week that the first televised game was sent across the airways from the Twin Cities, as I say, from Nicollet Park. In the past weekend and in the past 10 days, I have wandered across the entire state and had conversations with many Minnesotans, and I have to tell you that they're very interested in what you all are doing here. I was in War Road about 10 days ago. When I got up in the morning, I went and picked up the Fargo Forum and the Grand Forks Herald, and the headlines were about the Twins, not the Cubs or the Rockies or the Millers. A week ago Friday, I had an opportunity to speak at a statewide Rotary meeting at Madden's in Brainerd, and after I finished my prepared comments, the first question that I received on my presentation on service and giving back to communities and in effect the private sector's role in society, the first question I received is, how are we doing on the new ballpark legislation? I recall when I came to the university in the fall of 1960, I went to my first Major League Baseball game in the spring of 1961, and like many of you, I shall never forget the feeling of being part of the big leagues. The leaders in this community made this a reality back in the 50s, and I've always believed that today's leaders need to step in and do whatever is necessary to retain these community assets. I want to assure the next generation can have the same opportunities of pride, of being a winner, of being the very best, something that we all Minnesotans have experienced over the past several years. This weekend, I had the opportunity to care for my first grandchild. Alexander is 14 months old, and I'm looking forward to taking Alexander to his first outdoor baseball game. If we get the election done now, he'll be just about the right age to be there on opening day with his grandfather. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. Let's find the right solution, and let's get it done. Thank you.
Representative Hausman has a question. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to Mr. Campbell for really outstanding leadership on the issue of transit investment in this state. You, I think, challenged the whole business community, and that community has weighed in, I think, now in a significant way. And that's sort of the context in which I'd like to place my question.
Certainly.
The House did not fund North Star, as you know, from the headlines of last week, and it has, for yet another year, cut transit operating and has cut it on into the future. That's the context of the timing question I have for you.
Well,
Mr. Rolnick was here. He said it clearly is our obligation to always decide the issues of priority. Where does our next dollar of tax money go? And I'm one of those who has in the past heard all of your arguments and has voted for this particular investment. It's the timing issue that is the difficulty for me. Where does the next dollar of our tax money go this year?
Mr. Chair. It's a very difficult question to answer. I think my response to that is that, for the most part, the incremental cash flows from this are really built around user fees. And so these are streams of revenues that will come from the folks that ultimately utilize the facilities. And so for that reason, it would seem to me we could do some of this, and then we will obviously have to continue to prioritize all the other needs that the state has in front of it.
And, Mr. Chair, one more question.
Representative Houseman.
The other practical dilemma I see in this bill, as all the host communities have come and sat at that table, they have all agreed there must be state money to make this work. But from all of our state leadership, from the governor to the speaker to, I think, the fiscal conservatives who are prepared to vote for this, there is a belief that they can honestly say to their constituents, there will be no money from our district. It is only another district that will raise taxes. That incongruity of thought, do you have any advice or observation about that?
Mr. Campbell.
I'm not sure that I can totally respond to that. I do believe, however, that the comment I made about the host communities, I think that in the examples that I've looked at, they have been very creative. They've candidly gone above and beyond their previous efforts to try to find a way to get this done. I guess the last thing that I would say is that, having negotiated many, many, many complex financial transactions over the years, you know, there has to be a collaboration. There has to be a coming together of not just one, not just two, but in this case, three or perhaps even more organizations to find a middle ground to get something done. And very candidly, the last 10 years, as I've looked at the deals on the table, they just never quite seem to work. And as I look at the moving parts in what's being proposed here, I'm not saying that everything is absolutely perfect. There's probably a bit of fine-tuning that has yet to be done. But the reality of this is pretty close to the parties coming to a transaction that will work. And I guess the last thing I'd say is that we've had this debate over 10 years, and in some respects, I think it has sapped the energy of all of Minnesota. I'm sure it's taken a toll on all of you and the folks that were here before you. And in some respects, in my case, I continue to want to work very hard on transportation issues. It's one of the key projects we're working on at Itasca. And I'd sort of like to get this one behind us so we could go on to other pressing issues that I think have lost some energy because of this particular situation.
Well, Mr. Campbell, part of, I think, the reason that a lot of us are struggling is precisely because of the revenue streams. There's a general sales tax increase for Hennepin County and only Hennepin County, or for City of St. Paul and only the City of St. Paul, or about a 14% increase for Anoka County and only Anoka County. Then there's the meals tax, and you know, I really have a real problem saying to a person from Mound who goes and meets their friends at Perkins in Long Lake that they're going to have to throw a dime towards whoever simply because they happen to have had a meal in Hennepin County. I don't see how this is a user's pay. It is the residents' pay, but not all the residents, only a certain select few of the Twin Cities pay. And I think that is some of the unease that a number of members have on this committee. Mr. Campbell.
I respect your position, Mr. Chair. And as I said in my opening remarks, I'm not an expert on all the terms and conditions of the bill. And that's some of the things that will have to get worked out, it seems to me.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Campbell.
you know, you probably are much better capitalist than I am, because you know, I see I'm not a very good one. And in your previous occupation, I'm sure that you always had to watch the bottom line. But, you know, you talked about the significant commitment by the teams in the bill, and really, I'd like to know where they are, where you think they are, because you know financing a lot better than me. So tell me where the significance.
Well, my sense is that the teams are obligating themselves over a long period of time, committing significant cash flows from the operations. It's whether it's rent or other forms of fees that they'll end up being paid. It's like. It's like building an apartment building, and the tenants end up paying the rent, which ultimately amortizes the debt on the facility. And it seems to me that in the case of both the Vikings and the Twins, they've committed significant cash flows to ultimately finance this project.
But Mr. Chair, Mr. Campbell, aren't the cash flows in a lot of instances generated by the fact that the stadium was built for them by two-thirds by either the local taxpayers or the state taxpayers?
Mr. Campbell.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is that professional sports is a somewhat different business. The Congress has treated these businesses perhaps differently than other businesses across the country, and so here again, I think it's a partnership of the owners and the communities and hopefully the state that ultimately get this job done.
Well, Mr. Campbell, finally, you know, as a CEO of Norwest and Wells Fargo, what would you have done if I walked into your office and said, well, you're going to borrow me this money for this project and I'm going to pay a third of it and you're going to give me two-thirds? Would you have escorted me out of your office or thrown me out?
No, I'd have taken a financial statement just to see whether you had the ability to pay the third.
Exactly. Thank you for making my point, Mr. Campbell.
Well, Representative Rufino, you're being too kind, because when you take a look at what the investment really is,
I know, Mr.
it's
Chair.
Like $25 million down and the rest in over 30 years.
Generated.
$500 million building.
Generated by the stadium that we are building.
Exactly. Mm. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned, Mr. Campbell, you like the financial model that you see. Can you tell me what the financial model is? I'm trying to look through the amendment today to figure out what it is. But what is it you like about the financial model, or whatever it is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's the model of collaboration of the three entities coming together, that ownership provides a piece, and I'm not going to get into a discussion of the one-third. It's in the governor's bill, and it seems, as I say earlier, close to being appropriate. The host community's involvement in making it successful, and lastly, the state's willingness to provide a financial vehicle that allows for the remaining third to get done. And as I say, without being an expert on all the moving parts, and I have not seen the amendment that is at your table this morning, the concept as outlined in Representative Stang's bill, as I say, seems very close to something that could and should get done.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Campbell, what say you to the roughly 50% plus people who don't want to spend any taxpayers' dollar on this?
Mr. Campbell.
Well, I'm sure that there are many decisions that you all face, that if you were to take a poll, that there are a lot of 50-50 issues that that you have to deal with. But my personal opinion is that this is something that should be done. I just, from my experience in attempting to recruit people to this community, having it be a big league community means a great deal. And many major corporations make investments here because people are attracted to come here. And as I said in my remarks, one of the key attributes is having professional sports here that makes this a unique place. As I say, I was in Fargo and Grand Forks last week, and they're not that they aren't very nice communities, but having lived in Omaha 5 years, it's a nice AAA community, but it's not big league.
We refer to it as Moorhead and East Grand Forks.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Campbell, is there any way we can get some tax dollars out of one of those towns you mentioned up there to pay for this thing, or even North Dakota, since they send people down here to look at the games? Some way we can get there at their property tax base or something else, like the rest of us are going to do?
Well, if they come to the games, they will help amortize the debt that will be incurred to accomplish this.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Campbell, earlier today, one of the testifiers mentioned that no one has asked the question about whether or not the Twins or Vikings could do these, construct a stadium on their own without public help. Do you believe that if the Twins or Vikings went to your former bank, they could put together a package to privately finance the construction of a stadium?
Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, I do not believe that they can. As I said before, I think this has to be a classic public-private partnership of where the owners, and in this case, I'll say it again, the host communities in the state come together for what I believe is the public benefit. They simply cannot do it on their own. And yet, in my humble opinion, if the three parties do work together and find a solution that can work, and it's a very appropriate transaction to get done.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Campbell, if you were to look at a proposal by the Twins or the Vikings for financing, what types of documents and financial information would you need at your bank?
Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, probably a lot. You've never met a banker that didn't ask for a couple more forms to be signed, and yet there are good minds working on this, it seems to me, and the documentation, candidly, of this shouldn't be a problem. It should be relatively easy to get done once you get the concept nailed down.
Thank you.
Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Campbell, in your business, I'm sure that, I shouldn't say I'm sure, but did you have some loans that involved TIF districts that particular business went bankrupt? Did you experience that in any way?
I think we did, yes, exactly.
Okay. And as you look at this piece of legislation, do you see any flaws in the manner by which we are asking for the funding to be put into effect, that it would be a there would be some deficits in regard to the financing?
Well, I think that gets back perhaps to the previous question of the analysis that's done and the documentation that's required. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to ultimately assure that sort of thing, and there again, I mean, this is once the concept's set, this should be a fairly straightforward business transaction to document. And if there are assurances that you need somehow, some way, I think in the case of the Twins, if I understand it correctly, they've assured they've been willing to perhaps share some of the upside value of the operation. It's a situation of analyzing the risk and the returns and then documenting it appropriately.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Campbell, we don't know each other. I represent Bloomington, so I'm your neighbor. And I guess, you know, I understand that you'd like to see something done, and there's a lot of us who would. But, you know, I'd just like to ask you about, you know, the unfairness many of us see within the funding stream. And that is because we're next-door neighbors as far as our communities. You know, I'm in your community a lot, and you're probably in mine. And, in fact, I have all my kids play on traveling teams around the metro, so we move around the metro regularly. And one of my daughters is on a traveling team that her home field is Edina. And so I go up 50th through the 50th in France neighborhood 3 days a week. She plays on a field just two blocks off 42nd in France. So I'm in your community a lot. And, you know, I'd like to make it personal for you when you say you support this. And, you know, one of the unfairnesses I think you ought to think about as a Hennepin County resident is all of Southdale and all the fine establishments to eat at in Southdale would pay more than the other counties in the state if this proposal passes and if the Twins go to Minneapolis. All of the areas, the retail establishments through sales tax and through their restaurants at 50th and France would pay more. Tejas would pay more. I mean, places you are very familiar with, yet not receive a benefit that certainly would be accrued to a host city, not a host county. And I think that, you know, people are willing to say, well, that's okay if all the bowling alleys in a county pay more, or the bars in a county pay more, until they think about this. Like you're my neighbor, my neighbors to the south and to my west border is Representative Eric Paulson in Prairie. He would pay more, like you and I, and Representative Eric Hart, but right south of me is Representative Wilkin and Egan and Representative DuPont and Burnsville. They would not. So these are literally within 5 or 6 miles of each other. And I think that those of us who represent part of the county that would not receive a benefit have a very personal issue with it. In your mind, knowing this now and thinking about it that way, that you and Edina are going to pay more, but people in Burnsville and Egan, just a stone's throw away, are not, do you think it would be better to have a metro-wide state tax, the sales tax that's proposed in this bill, that's one county? Would it be better to have it metro-wide so that you're actually able to have a lower rate because you have a larger base to spread it across? From a financial perspective, do you think if you could write the bill that would be a more fair way to do it? And then secondly, and I think it would be better that way, but I would think it would be better still to have the entire state contribute in some regard. The current proposal says one county should pay and 86 don't. Can you just comment on how you feel about that if you could design the bill yourself?
Mr. Camp.
Well, philosophically, I've always thought that if you put a small tax on a large area, it reduces the pain for everyone. And so philosophically, I support that. I guess to me, whether it's St. Paul or it's Anoka County or it's Hennepin County, in the case of the two counties, you know, there is significant mass there. And so, to me, this is why I don't want to really get into the details. I understand there are some sales taxes that are going to come off, and the question is, you know, can you just leave them on and use the cash flow that would come from that? It's really not adding anymore; it's just keeping at the same level. But again, don't hold me to the details. I'm fine with paying a little bit more in Hennepin County as a resident of Hennepin County to get this thing done.
Any further questions,
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Campbell? Representative Rupert Davis.
Mr. Chair, I just got to ask Mr. Campbell one more question because, you know, I've always, Mr. Campbell, been a believer in public-private partnerships. And in that sense, I'm not a very good believer in the free market system, you know. And now it seems you're coming around to my line of thinking, and I really like this when I can get a CEO of a...
I may reconsider your loan.
I always shop locally, Mr. Cavill. I can assure you I don't have a loan at Wells Fargo. But, you said in your earlier testimony, which I agree with you, that the state has an obligation to the arts and that, which... We do, and I agree the 100%. A society without culture isn't a society. And, you know, to that end, we pay, I'm sure, when, you know, we're paying out of income taxes, too. And so my question to you is a new, somewhat socialist like me, no? Do you think the cuts we made in the income tax maybe were a little too deep a few years ago when we did the 99-2000 income tax cuts? And I believe, if Mr. Michaels can help me, that we're probably to the tune of $800 million or so a year, but I could be off a little bit there. But wouldn't the income tax type tax be more fair in funding things, not only like the arts but the stadium, rather than a sales tax, which hits people harder, as Representative Lincheski's talking about?
Mr. Chair,
humor me.
You are you're the experts in tax. I think I'd sort of leave the response of that to you. I would tell you, however, that I retired 2 years ago, and I personally love this state. I've spent my entire 62 years of my life here, except for 5 years when I lived in Omaha. And we bought a home in Naples 6 years ago. And I will never become a resident of Florida, because I think for those of us that were successful in this state, there's a responsibility of giving back to this state. And I just believe that's what, candidly, why I'm here this morning, because I care enough about this particular issue that I hope that you all can find a way to find a solution to get this done. Many of us who believe like I do are paying huge premiums for retaining our residency here, but we think it's of value, and we think that we're continuing to invest in one of the greatest states in this country. We didn't get to where we were in the 50s and 60s without a philosophy of what things cost, but a philosophy of investing in this state to make it great. And that's sincerely what I hope you can all think about when you come to the conclusions on this bill and the other legislations. I think, as many of you know, I'm involved in several other projects that relate to public-private activities. And it has to be a partnership. And I hope that you all will focus on continuing to invest in Minnesota for the long term.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Campbell, I appreciate your commitment and your sincerity.
Any further questions for Mr. Campbell? Glad you had a taste of what I go through, Jim. They're on their good behavior.
Mr. Chair, I have to say, I haven't done this since I was in Nebraska trying to get the banking laws changed. I've literally, since the early 80s, avoided this. And I never realized how smart I was. So chances are you won't see me back for a while. Thank you very much.
What about a bicameral or unicameral legislature?
Unicameral, nonpartisan.
It was a lot easier dealing with 49.
Okay. Does anybody else in the public wish to testify? Okay.
Chairman Abrams, I know I've spoken. Can I briefly speak to the latest provision?
Very briefly. We try to be fair. Please identify yourself again for the tape.
Very good, Chairman Abrams. Dan Dobson, again from No Stadium Tax Coalition. I apologize, but I've had the opportunity to review the latest provisions that were handed out on Friday, and this bill is still extremely troubling. An oversight provision has been added, as many of you know. However, there is no final review of the bill. Caps have been added to the bill. However, these caps in bonding are still way too high. For the Twins, the bonding authority is probably set 45% to 50% too high. It is set at $650 million, I believe. This exceeds St. Louis's cost of their new stadium by over 50%. The Vikings is set probably $200 million too high. It is $240 million higher than Gillette Stadium. Referendum provision has been added. However, this only applies to sales tax. It does not apply to bar, restaurant, or the new entertainment tax, which then leads to the question, what is the entertainment tax? It says entertainment areas. Will this new tax apply to the Guthrie, Walker, your local movie, Omni Theater? It's not clear what will apply to. Infrastructure, still, there are no, it's clear that the local municipalities or host communities will pay all the infrastructure. There is no cap on these. There is no review of the infrastructure costs. Finally, the upfront contribution has been lowered to 25%. This does not leads to a similar problem with the fan contributions. It does not state where which column the fan contributions go into. Is the fan contributions a public contribution or a team contribution? Under the bill as it is now written, the stadium could be built, the team could sell personal seat licenses, like St. Louis, to 20,000 personal seat licenses at $500,000 a pop for $100 million, and the team essentially has most of its 25% upfront contribution. St. Louis was quickly oversubscribed. This bill still has many, many major flaws, should be, again, rejected in its entirety. Thank you.
Representative Lunchesky on this point.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's really a question to you, Mr. Chair. Something the testifier brought up, I was previously talking to Ms. Dalton about a concern I had about the amusement tax, and members may not know this, but the only communities in Hennepin County that have an amusement tax are Bloomington and Minneapolis. So if you vote for a proposal that would allow Hennepin County to do it, currently there's only two cities of 45 who have that. One of the concerns I have about that, Mr. Chair, is when you look at defining an amusement tax, and the language in the bill doesn't attempt to do that, it's very vague, and I've asked Ms. Dalton, and maybe the whole committee could receive this, Mr. Chair, is to define, well, how does Minneapolis define an amusement tax? And currently, amusement admissions for them is quite broad. Bars that charge a cover, bowling alleys, all kinds of things. The bill does not say how we would go about defining that tax. Minneapolis does it via ordinance. My understanding is it would allow, say, Hennepin or Ramsey to just define what they're going to tax and what they're not going to tax, and there's been no discussion of that in this committee at all, and it didn't occur to me today until I was reading the bill about the amusement tax, thinking, you know, only in the Hennepin scenario, only two cities currently would even pay that tax. But I have been told by Mr. Michael that, no, the Hennepin County proposal could find a way to tax all 45 counties in this particular tax, but it is unclear how we would define that tax. And I think that before we vote, we need to see the two cities that do tax in this area, what they're taxing for point of reference, and then see what is Hennepin County's intent or Ramsey's or Anoka's or anyone's when they say they want to implement an amusement tax and now without a referendum, what they're talking about, because it's just not in the bill.
Yep. Go to a movie, Representative Lunchesky.
Pay attack.
Because you don't want to stay home watching Victory Sports on your cable television system. You don't want to you don't want to go down to the ballpark. You pay for the ballpark. You want to go bowling? You pay.
Yeah, that's what Minneapolis does. So I think that information would be helpful to all of us.
Representative Burrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, would it include golf courses? Is it golfing amusement?
Anything you want.
And, Mr. Chair,
it is
again, to that
given
point.
Given the Hennepin County Board, you are limited only by their imagination, Representative Burrell.
Could it include tickets to the Wild or the Timberwolves, Mr. Chair? Is that amusement?
They could tax the Timberwolves in order to pay for the Twins.
Wow.
Representative Mallory.
Well, Mr. Chairman, was just raised as to what the amusement tax considers. In Minneapolis, it's any bar, restaurant, hall, cabaret, or other public place where music and dancing privileges or any other entertainment except mechanical music alone.
Well, at this point, we can either go to the DE-5 amendment and go through that, or we could bring down the Department of Revenue to talk about the fiscal. No, I kind of like to hear first from the Department. Department of Revenue, and then I know some members have a couple questions for local units of government, and then we will go on to the DE-5 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Is there a fiscal note for the amendment?
There was one that was handed out on Friday that should still be in your packets.
Dated April 23rd?
April 28th is the latest one. Members all have in their packets the old April 28th note.
Yep.
Well, can you hand out the revenue estimates for April 28th, Mike? Oh, this is to the DE-2 amendment. Has this been revised? Has the money been revised, Representative Stanger? Is the DE-2 amendment still operative as far as this issue?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's still off the DE-2. I don't believe they've gotten the numbers up there.
Okay, well, then we're wasting the department's time if we ask them to talk on the DE-2 amendment. When are you going to have the DE-5 amendment revenue estimate?
Mr. Chair, I'm Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue. We just got the amendment this morning in committee. So. But I don't know if it significantly changes what we have from the DE-2.
Mr. Gephardt, there were a lot of concepts in here that I think the committee ought to be thinking about. And why don't we go through the revenue estimate at this time. Mr. Gephardt, welcome. Mr. Manson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Gephardt. I'm with the Department of Revenue. I'd be glad to go through the revenue analysis that's dated April 28th. It isn't the latest version. It does reflect the bill as amended to provide a sales tax exemption for the construction of the stadium. There are three items that are on this revenue analysis that are identified as costs to the state. The first one is the construction materials sales tax exemption. The assumption here is that a baseball stadium would be constructed beginning in the spring of 2006, ready for play in the 2008 session. It is approximately a $500 million stadium. It would cost the state in total about $14.6 million by our estimate for the exemption of the 6.5% sales tax. It's divided into 3 years. It would be 06, 07, which are shown on the front of the revenue analysis, and then there is an additional $5.8 million cost in fiscal year 08. So again, in total, $14.6 million of cost. The revenue estimate does not include the construction of a football stadium. A football stadium would probably cost in excess of $500 million. We don't currently have a good estimate of the cost of the construction of a
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Point, Mr. Gephardt, you know, in the bill where it goes a year after the first game is played in each stadium,
yes.
is that the 5.8, or is that year is out? And what kind of, can you give me an example, because I never understood that. Construction is still going on a year after the first game is played, that thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the assumption here for the cost of the sale of the construction, it would begin in the spring of 06, and the stadium would be available for the start of play in April of 08. So there is three fiscal years worth of construction activity that's assumed here, and that's how you get 3 years worth of cost. The cost is in 06, 07, and would be done in fiscal 08, but the stadium would be available and ready for the 08 season.
But, Mr. Chair, am I reading the bill wrong where it says that the subdivision for construction materials expires for each stadium 1 year after the first major league game? So what I'm thinking is if they still have to buy, like, food processors or whatever for the stadium, would all of that still be exempt in that following year when they're working out the bugs, and that's not in your estimate here?
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the assumption is that the stadium would be completed and ready for play in 08, at the start of the 08 season. If the construction took longer than that, if the stadium was not ready for play in 08, then there would be additional sales tax costs. The sales tax would be spread over more years. We're assuming, though, that it would be done for purposes of display of this revenue estimate.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavino.
Am I not asking this question right? I hope you understand what I'm saying. In the bill, the game starts, and a year later, there's still potential for sales tax exemptions on construction materials. And I'm wondering why that's there and what it applies to, and if it does apply to some type of, you know, whether it's food processing or whatever in the stadium, if it goes beyond when it opens up in 08 and it's still in 09, there's more sales tax exemptions that are being, where the state's taking a hit.
Well, there's always additional construction after a new stadium opens. I mean, when you're done with these things, you sometimes have a few amenities that still have to be finished. Part of the scoreboard hasn't been there when they opened. I know in a couple of instances, items of that nature. I would suspect that they are relatively minor in comparison to the whole total cost. I think that the bill's author is just trying to cover that contingency, Representative Rucavina. Mr. Manson.
Hi, Mr. Chairman and Representative Rucavina. I think, too, we've built in the total cost of the stadium, and this might have a little bit of a shift for minor items that would flow into that next year, but we're still looking at the total cost of the stadium as it pertains to the sales tax exemption, and maybe that would be spread just a little bit differently in some instances.
Representative Stang, who gets credit for the construction sales tax material exemption as far as their third? Does the state get credit for that, or does it just come off the total cost and the locals and the team gets a third off because of the sales tax exemption? Who gets the credit for the sales tax exemption, Representative Stang?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's our intent to have the state get credit for that exemption.
Okay. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You have that down, Joel? Oh, it's in there. Okay.
Yep.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Manson, I just have a quick question in regards to these revenue notes, or maybe Mr. Gephardt. You suggested that there's a four. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just going on what you were saying. There's a $14.5 million cost in terms of what the state will forego due to these exemptions. But do you have any rule of thumb based on past experience when we've given out an exemption like the Duluth experience, if that's correct? What the state actually gains in terms of revenue from the income generated by the jobs, or by, you know, if we're having these products being put into a facility, obviously somebody is making the product, so we would have income generated off of those jobs as well. Do you have any idea on the offset or a rule of thumb?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the revenue analysis that we produce do not try to take into account those secondary types of impacts. We basically, those are always part of the debate, but the way we produce the revenue estimates themselves, we do not take those into account.
We're going to talk about velocity, Representative Broad. My capital gains tax reduction is ready to roll. I'm fully locked and loaded on that, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gephardt, even though it's not part of the revenue estimate, do you have any rule of thumb on past experience?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there are studies that are done that look at these types of things. It really comes down to basically how you envision them working. When a state gives out an exemption like this, is there a corresponding reduction in government spending that goes along with it? You can get into the real philosophy of how you would do what is generally referred to as dynamic scoring. Again, we don't try to take that into account, and the Department of Trade and Economic Development, or DEED as they're now called, do look at these types of things periodically, but we have not.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the property tax part, and you indicate that there won't be an effect of that until 2010, so that the 2011 there'd be the PTR effects. Why would there not be some effect of taking it off? In other words, if you're taking it off the tax rolls, and I assume next year or the following year, wouldn't there be some effect that way? And if that's minimal, how do we know that there would be any development from what the present is that would create the big... In other words, how do you assume that this property would be developed if a stadium wasn't built there beyond what either of the parcels are right now? In fact, the St. Paul, and I think you'd be losing some businesses.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, basically the way the estimate is done for the property tax portion is it would not be done and completed, and the exemption wouldn't start until payable year 2010. Any of the intervening years, we assume, would not be affected by this exemption in the property tax until the stadium was actually built and exempted, and not the property tax not paid, starting with paid in 2010. And that's the way you get a property tax refund then 2 years after that.
Now I'm confused. Representative Mallory.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I understand the PTR is after it's off the rolls, but if we're going to acquire it next year or the following year, why wouldn't it be off the rolls right away? If it's going to be the public's acquiring it, why isn't it off the rolls?
You have a $10 million piece of property that's acquired by the public. You're no longer going to pay property taxes. Why isn't there a PTR cost in that? Another way to put the question. Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this estimate did not try to take that type of thing into account. It was basically looking at the developed property in the stadium as far as the exemption.
You know, we get literally rung up for $8,000, I think, Representative Stang, your watershed district provision. We had to carry that as a cost of PTR. We literally get rung up on that, but here, $10 million off the rolls of taxable property, $200,000. It has to have a discernible cost of, you know, probably $10,000 to $15,000 at least. But you know, in the past, we've been rung up for $7,000. But that's neither here nor there. It's, I think, a interesting point. I'm just trying to figure out 2010. If the stadium opens in 2008, I think what they're saying is that there won't be a value assigned to it for 2009. The tax is payable in 2010. That's how I think it works.
No, I know how all of that works, but
the property tax exemption, well, I don't understand.
And I also don't understand that there wouldn't be a shift of property taxes occurring as soon as it goes off the rolls next year or the following.
It is. Unquestionable. It may be an inconvenient fact, but it is a fact, and I'm sure Mr. Gephardt will certainly take that into account when he does a revenue estimate for the DD5 amendment. Representative Jacobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gephardt, I think I know the answer already, but is there any factor put into this revenue note for the sales or the loss of revenue to the state from people who would say otherwise be spending their entertainment dollars in New Prague or Moorhead or Slayton? Now spending their entertainment dollars in this district that we don't collect tax revenue from.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the view that we would have for the sales tax dollars that are lost under the sales tax exemption are associated with the new baseball stadium are dollars that would otherwise have been spent somewhere else. And so there is really no new revenues that we're looking at here in association with either the construction or with the income or sales taxes that are associated with the increment part of this financing.
Mr. Gephardt, along that line, I agree there's no new revenue, but there's certainly a loss of revenue in that entertainment dollars had previously been taxable in whatever local community they were in. But now by spending that money inside this TIF district, that money is not taxable. So to me, it leaves a hole in the general fund. You can claim that it's not spending general fund money to create a stadium, but second grade economics says you're creating a hole somewhere else. Money doesn't magically appear to fill a TIF district in a stadium.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I am not saying that there would be new money that would appear to fill this TIF district. I am saying that, the money associated with this district would be considered a loss to the general fund.
Mr. Chair, but I don't really think we're really showing any loss to the general fund on this revenue note, are we?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the three items that we list on the front are all losses to the general fund. We have not tried to quantify the portion of state income and sales taxes associated with the increment because it's basically a negotiated amount. We talk about that in the text of the revenue analysis. We do say that the first transfer from the general fund based on the incremental amounts would occur in fiscal year 09. That would be the first time the state general fund would be impacted from the incremental transfer amounts.
I think they answered my concern, Representative Jacobson, because there are some stadium proponents. No, I'm not going to go into which one. But there's stadium proponents who say, gee, this isn't going to cost anybody anything. There's no cost to the state, et cetera, et cetera. Ad nauseum. And what the Department of Revenue, the Minnesota Department of Revenue, is saying that, yes, there is a general fund cost to the state. Now, you can make the decision that it's okay, that for societal reasons, it's a good thing to do, but you can't make the claim that there isn't a cost. There is. And I think that's what the revenue analysis shows. You can argue with Mr. Gephardt and others about the order of magnitude. You can argue about dynamics where you can go through all that analysis. But to people who say that there is no cost to the state, demonstrably not true. Demonstrably. Order of magnitude is open to debate. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, maybe you can help me. With regard to the sales tax exemption cost that's noted in the revenue note, it's my recollection, I certainly could be wrong, that when we've heard bills regarding sales tax exemption for construction of electrical generating facilities, they don't show a cost. Am I incorrect? And if so, if you can offer an explanation, or maybe the department can offer an explanation.
You are incorrect, Representative Coles.
That's happened
because
before.
Because what we have heard are the property tax exemptions. A lot of these facilities also had in separate bills or provisions in the original bill for a sales tax exemption. And given the fact that I was given a target, or this committee was given a target, for the 0405 biennium, which we met, and I had the informal target. It was never given to me in stone, but I felt that just given the state of the budget going into the next biennium, we had a zero target, less the Racino issue for this committee. That's what we came out with, zero. And if we were going to do a sales tax exemption for a electric generating facility, that would have been part of zero target, which means that there are either revenue raisers or other revenue losers that would have to be used in order to balance. So, no, we did not do any sales tax exemptions for generation equipment. And I even think we had to carry a little PTR cost for some of these facilities as well. But it ended up being a zero. Net zero. Any further questions? Representative Broad and then Representative Mallory. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find these revenue estimates a little curious. In one experience that I'm thinking about is a revenue estimate for the Department of Administration, I think, in regards to reverse auction. I think the estimate showed it was like, and I don't have the numbers obviously in front of me, but it was a significant cost to the state to save money. So, you know, the revenue estimate shows, well, this is the cost to the state of $250,000, let's say. But in the end, we're going to end up saving, we can bank X number of dollars, $500,000, $600,000, whatever it is. So what I'm saying is that we look at these revenue estimates sometimes in a tunnel. And I think that we do need to look at all those extra items, such as the increases in income taxes, the increases in property tax collections, and things like that. I can't score them. I'm just not that bright. But I do think we need to look at these things as well.
Well, Representative Broad. Let me give a little advice. And the advice is that there has to be an impartial scorekeeper. The impartial scorekeeper is the Department of Finance and the Department of Revenue. We may not like what they say all the time. I know I certainly don't. You can certainly go to them and they'll certainly talk. You may recall that there was one item in the bill that dealt with the circularity of the estate tax, and we were able to go to the finance and show them that it wasn't built into their forecast, and they were willing to make a forecast adjustment, which they don't do very often. But on dynamic scoring, Representative Broad, others have tried, and others have failed miserably, and you just have to go with professionalism that the Department of Revenue and Finance has, and otherwise you're going to go nuts, because I've gone around and around on a lot of items myself. Representative Mallory.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess maybe you've answered. I was going to ask if there was some way we could get some type of an estimate on these future things that show up here as zero. Because people are running around and saying that there's no cost, as you said, and I just wondered, is there any way to get some type of estimate or not?
It becomes pretty difficult because, particularly on the sales and income tax, who knows what the payroll is going to. Who knows what the tax rates are going to necessarily look at the time you have to go by current law. You're basically going on the TWINS estimate as to the increased velocity of sales tax revenue generated within the stadium. And there is some sort of correlation between that increased sales tax and dollars that would normally go to the general fund. So I guess we could send them back to ask them for a rough estimate, but I think it's going to be very rough.
But, Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that they are giving rough estimates of those in setting the types of taxes and how much is needed to determine the bond. So somebody is making rough estimates.
You're right,
to make this happen. So
we will send them back. Representative Dorman and Representative Patney. Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stang, and maybe you covered this when I was out of the room, and so I apologize. But if I read this revenue estimate correctly, it's showing a loss to the general fund for a baseball stadium. And I'm not sure what a football stadium isn't there. Is it because it's not, won't be built in those time year frame or what? And the second part is, with this revision to the bill, are we going to hear from someone in the Pawlenty administration to talk about, you know, the governor and others have been very clear about saying no general revenue funds, and this is clearly general revenue. And so I'm wondering, you know, are we going to what's going to happen? I mean, are we likely to get this vetoed if we pass it, Representative Stang, or what's happening?
Mr. Chair, Representative Representative Dorman, I'm not sure why the Viking Stadium cost aren't included in this, because it would exempt both stadiums. And the issue with the governor's office, you certainly can call them up if you want to ask them that specific question.
Mr. Gephardt, when you do a revision, will you include whatever Viking Stadium costs would be there? I think that Representative Dorman makes a good point on that.
Mr. Chairman, we'll try to take that into account in total.
Thank you. Any further questions for the Department of Revenue? Oh, Representative Atkins, I'm sorry, you were on the list, and I looked at it and it messed up.
Excise me from the list. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And gentlemen, on the back page of your revenue note, first paragraph, where you talk about the calculation of the excess stadium taxes, and you note that that's the difference between the revenues at the new stadium and the defined baseline stadium tax revenues prior to the new stadium. That defined baseline stadium tax revenue figure, does that increase at some inflationary factor into the, basically we go out to year 30 when we talk about the sale of the bonds. So my question is the excess stadium taxes in excess of the baseline plus inflation or simply the baseline?
Mr. Gephardt, this could be before we did our work, Representative Atkins, that included in the amendment to Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the way the bill stands that is relative to this revenue analysis, the baseline amount is set, I believe, for the three calendar years prior to the opening of the stadium. If you assume that the stadium opened in 08, it would be 07, 06, and 05. Those items are fixed once that they become established. Future revenues above and beyond those baseline amounts would reflect growth and inflation, so the increment would grow conceptually over time.
And my issue, and it might be for the chair, for Mr. Michael, is when we, and we've now been through four bleed-alls or five, do we take into account inflation so that we capture just the growth, or are we capturing both the growth and the inflation?
We'll recognize Joel, who has put in, I believe, the different provision for the DE5 amendment, but as I recall, so that this wouldn't be subjected to manipulation, if the base years were 02, 03, 04 with an inflator. But Joel, am I correct in that?
My recollection as well.
Mr. Chair, the that is the baseline for the football, at the request of the Department of Revenue, we changed the baseline to be just 1 year, so they would have to do their estimate for 1 year, which is 2003. And I think they've subsequently, after we picked that, raised an issue that that may not allow them to do these calculations, because if they have to do them later this year because of the extension filers, and so it might need to be moved back to 02. But these amounts, to the question about inflation adjustments, the current version does provide that the baseline amounts would be indexed for inflation. If you look on page 18, subdivision 4, so it would not essentially capture just sort of general price inflation in the economy. And it would be to the extent that sales or payroll increases at a higher rate than the general consumer price index.
One final follow-up, then, and that is, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the TIF calculations that are being used by Dr. Wilson, for example, and by the teams, are they taking that into account, the fact that the baseline figure is going to be inflated at CPI?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, this is a new feature of this DE5 amendment, and so I suspect that people who've made calculations based on the old version, as Mr. Gephardt described, this was not a feature, and so I'm sure their models were capturing just the raw increase in payroll and sales tax revenues.
Thank you.
Representative Jacobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gephardt, and perhaps for you as well, Mr. Chairman, in looking at the new model we have, that the payments over the 30 years or the life of the lease are considered part of the team's upfront part of the team's contribution to building the stadium, would you perhaps consider that to be the equivalent of a principal payment on a mortgage? And be a non-deductible expense to the company, but rather an investment in an asset? Or would you just consider that a rental expense?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if you're talking about the new version, the DE5 version that is out there now, we really haven't had much of a chance to look at that. I guess we would have to get some advice as to how we might consider that.
Once it's categorized as rent, Representative, I believe it would be categorized as rent.
But along the same lines, Mr. Chairman, it's also considered part of their contribution to building the stadium. I guess I could argue both sides, but I could see that maybe that is considered principal payments on their obligation.
Joel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think, you know, we're getting into the nuances of tax law here, and quite honestly, I think the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of Revenue would look at the overall transaction and based upon the real economic substance of the nature of the payments, depending upon all of the facts and circumstances, would make a judgment as to whether this is a capital contribution that needs to be recovered on an amortized basis or whether it would be current annual rent. I mean, that's a very complex and there's a lot of judgment involved, and so I would hesitate to, you know, express an opinion as to how that would be characterized until all the documents and so forth are done.
I stand corrected.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, to that point, there is also language in the DE5 on page 16 and Subdivision 1 that states that the rent cannot be counted as part of the required team contribution.
Mr. Chairman, that's the provision on page 16 that Representative Stang refers to is referring to the accounting of the sort of the one-third team versus two-thirds state and local contribution. And I think what Representative Jacobson was asking about was sort of the income tax characteristics of the upfront payment, which is really a separate payment that the team might make depending upon how the negotiations go. And so that's sort of an income tax issue as opposed to this sort of public-private split.
Representative Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this, I'm not sure who this question is for, but I was curious for the football stadium proposal, does the sales tax exemption apply to other facilities besides the stadium itself? You know, like the health club facility, some of the other amenities that are proposed in the Anoka County plan.
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the exemption, I believe, refers only to the construction of the stadium.
Representative Sieben.
So that would include the locker room facilities, the stadium itself, and anything else you can think of, Representative Stang, that would be included in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sieben, it would include within the stadium itself, I believe the locker rooms, but if you're talking about the Vikings complex where they have a separate facility where they move their headquarters there, that would not include that.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know yet how much the increment that's going to be counted in the out years? Do we know how big that is yet?
Representative Dorman? No. I guess you can ask the teams, but no. And as the testimony, I think, showed, is that the increment will probably be higher for baseball than it will for football because of how the salary cap works in football and the fact that the Vikings have sold out and the Twins have drawn about $1.6 to $1.9 million, and they're moving into a facility where they'll have roughly 3.2 million seats, and there'll be some halo effect that will mean a lot of increment early, but who knows what's going to happen to the income over here.
Mr. Chair, if I understand how the bill works, and, well, maybe not agreeing with how people characterize it, they'll say there's no state money because in the out years you're going to have all this new sales and income tax. But if we don't know how much that is, how do we know if it's enough to cover it? And the second part is I think about some of the comments, and this is for Representative Stang, is I think about some of the comments that Representative Lincheski has made. If we were to identify another tax, whether it be a seven-county metro tax or a statewide tax, and say, you know what, we're going to use this, but if they're right and there's this huge increment down the road, then wouldn't the net effect of the general fund be the same if they are right?
Well, let me, I don't really understand the second part of your question. Let me try the first part of your question, Representative Dorman, which is, you know, one of my great criticisms of the bill is who bears the risk. And on the increment, the risk is shifted in the bill from where it was when it was introduced to where it is now, whereas the team would be making a rent payment of a certain amount, and then they would get a refund, much like the capital equipment refund, determined by the Department of Revenue. So the risk shifts, if you will, from this from the state to the team. And you know, Joel is still tracking down Pennsylvania experience, but if that is the benchmark that is being used by the proponents of the provision, let me just say that at least Pennsylvania Department of Revenue thinks that the amount of cooperation by the affected teams has not been to the level that they had desired. So in addition to all the other positives in changing it this way, not that I necessarily like it this way, but if you're going to do it, the question of who bears the risk.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me try it this way. If I, and maybe I just don't understand it, that could be. I think if I understand this, let's look at the football stadium. If they're saying, you know, we're collecting $10 now, but in the new stadium, there's going to be all this new activity, so we're going to collect $20. Therefore, we shouldn't count the extra $10. That's the increment. And so in the out years, if that's what we're going to spend as an increment. Well, if we were to pass another, either a statewide or Hennepin County tax or whatever, it shouldn't pick on Hennepin County, but just a, let's say a statewide tax for this, that generated $10 million a year, and we said, well, we're not sure that increment's going to be there, but let's use this instead. And if they're right, we pass this other $10 million a year tax, they're right, the increment is $10 million a year, then the net effect of the general fund would be the same.
Except insofar as if you deal with it as a refund, you know you're not going to be short. If you deal with it that this is going to raise $10 million and it raises $9.5 million, the question becomes, where do you get the $500,000 from? And then you have an argument between the team and the whoever the authority is as to how are you calculating it. $9.5 million is really $10 million, or, you know, any one of a thousand derivations, but if you get the money up front to deal with it as a refund, the team goes after you, probably in tax court, an action be made by the Commissioner of Revenue in order to get the refund. It's a question of who bears the risk. Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thoughts? The department said that with regard to all these taxes, they're just looking at the actual stadium and not this big district around it in Anoka County. My question, I guess, probably wouldn't apply to the Minneapolis-St. Paul one, but the Anoka County one. Since I thought that increment was going to the bonds, why would that not be a loss to the general fund? And if there's a property tax exemption for the entire big area around the stadium, not just the stadium, why wouldn't that affect the PTR?
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the revenue analysis is based on a version of the bill where the increment is calculated for the football stadium only at the football stadium. There is mention of the there is a district that is talked about in the bill, but for purposes of measuring the increment, it refers only to the stadium. I think the later versions do correct that. As far as the exemption for the construction of the football stadium, again, that's aimed only at the stadium itself, not in the area surrounding that.
Mr. Chair, to that point, somewhat in relation to Representative Stevens' question, if you look on page 5 of the DE5 amendment, I think it clarifies some of that issue related to the tax exemption. Starting on line 30, it says the exemption includes the concession suites and so on in the stadium. But on line 33, it does go on to say it does not include the team offices, the residential or business commercial development on the property related to that. So it's within that larger district. The tax exemption is only still on the stadium itself.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Stang, that answers the property tax, but the increment I thought was included and goes to the bonds payments, which has taken it away from the general fund, I assume. And I think that my understanding was the increment includes the whole district. Is that not true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mueller, include 175 acres. Yes. Think it will be collected.
So, Representative Mueller. Mr. Chairman, that goes back to my question, then why wouldn't that then be reduction in the general fund by all of those other? In other words, if we have a health complex, a medical center, just all kinds of, who knows what kinds of businesses are going in here, that's tax that we would probably have in the general fund that's not going there, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the latest versions out there, you are correct that the increment is calculated on the district amount. And so there would be any amounts above the baseline calculated for the district would be losses to the general fund. I think the confusion came about because the version that the revenue analysis is written on does not include the entire district. It only refers to the stadium for the calculation. So that's been a change in the later version.
To that point, Mr. Chair?
Representative
Rubino. That point, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gephardt. Yes. So like for an Anoka County, then, what is the baseline? It's the revenue that the Vikings were bringing to the state with their players' income tax and the sales taxes at the Metrodome. Is that the baseline for the Vikings? And then anything above that for Anoka would pay for the tax increment.
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, the baseline would be calculated on the activities for the Vikings at the Metrodome.
And Mr. Chair, then, could I just ask Representative Stang, you know, you seem to, with your amendment in the last bill, with the 175 acres, that it might be difficult for Anoka to, if they were awarded the bid, to generate the what's needed for the state's portion on that small of an acre. Do you intend to do anything with that, Representative Stang?
Representative Stang.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rickovina, we don't have numbers yet on what is generated within a certain size of the district. They're still working on that. I believe there's some work done being or currently being done by Anoka County to get better estimates on what we're dealing with. But I think the nature of our bill is to confine it as much as possible.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stang, do you intend to give us any kind of numbers before we're supposed to vote on this bill?
Representative Stang.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rickovina, on that part, it's our intent to get them as quickly as we can to you.
And we are voting tomorrow, Representative Stang. Final exam tomorrow. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm new to the tax committee, and so I've been trying to track the last 10 minutes of questions, and the underlying issue for me is still that we basically don't have any numbers, just the answer to the last question, because nothing is sure. And we almost have to remind ourselves, what is really the heart of this bill? The heart of this bill is setting up new government bureaucracy. That's the heart of this bill. And in other words, the bill says we have a top-down solution. We're going to form a government bureaucracy, and then that is going to be our solution. And as nearly as I can tell from this lack of numbers, we're asked to simply put our trust in that new statewide bureaucracy that has no track record, and that's the decision we have to make tomorrow. And it brings me right back to this strong belief that we have to go back to leaving it to local governments and the team to resolve all these, to have a plan, to come up with such clear numbers that the state knows what's being asked of it when the issue is before us.
How are you gonna
well, that was the philosophy in the past, Representative Hausman's philosophy is different this year, I guess. Representative Dorman.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three questions. First one for Representative Stang. Representative Stang, or Mr. Chair, Representative Stang, why use the why create a new stadium commission? What's wrong with using the sports facility commission?
Oh, I can answer that. Oh. But Representative Stang.
Mr. Chair, are you, Representative Dermer, are you talking about as far as negotiating this deal, the MSA, replacing, I mean, the issue
the
is
football and the baseball stadium in Minneapolis. Six of the seven members of the Sports Facilities Commission are appointed by the Minneapolis City Council.
Fair enough, Mr. Chair. That's why I'm asking the question. You guys got to know. Second question, Mr. Chair, this would be for Mr. Gephardt. As I read the provision on page 17 of the bill, lines 12 through 15, it talks about capturing the sales tax remitted by vendors and concessionaires for sales in the stadium district on days when you have professional football events occurring. How do you track that? I mean, how do you know how does a vendor track that? I mean, I'm trying to think about how they would do it now versus what they'll have to do. If you've got a restaurant and you're open 365 days a year, how do you track your sales tax? How do they report that to you? How will you know?
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is an administrative complexity to this bill about how we would how we would track it, and I think there is an issue as far as the vendors being able to report.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gephardt, is there a fiscal note as to what this is going to cost? You know, your department to administer?
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I don't believe there is one.
Mr. Chair, have we just not requested one, or?
Oh, everything has been requested, Representative Dorman, and in order to, I see that the debate is yesterday afternoon for the DE-5 amendment. I just don't think the department has had an opportunity to. They've been in the room since 9 o'clock in the morning, or 10 o'clock in the morning. They haven't had an opportunity to go through their usual process as to what it will cost to administer the bill. And I would suspect you're going to need a provision in here that any cost by state government will be borne by the team.
Well, Mr. Chair, that would make me feel better on that area. Do we have a fiscal note on any of the earlier versions? I remember seeing revenue estimates. I don't know if I saw a fiscal note. Is what they thought it would cost?
I haven't seen one, but I'm sure one will be forthcoming.
Okay. And the last question, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gephardt, if I understood your answer to Representative Rukavina on the football district, is there no addition to the baseline for the sales tax that would be generated in the area without the football stadium?
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, any of the activity that would occur in that district would be in the current outlook of the state. So if there is any amount that is deemed to be associated with the increment, that would be a loss. So there is sales tax revenue that would be associated with the district, irrespective of the construction of the stadium.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gephardt, let's look at the Anoka County plan for a second. If this something doesn't happen, the stadium doesn't get built there. We heard last week that we've got to do something quickly because that land is going to be developed. That land in and of itself in that area would generate some taxes, some of those being sales taxes. And so my question is, are those sales taxes that would be generated anyway somehow in this calculation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the sales taxes that would be generated anyway are in the current outlook for the state's budget.
Any further questions for the department? Representative
Rubina. Mr. Chair, either one of you guys up there. In this bill, the baseline football payroll or the baseline baseball payroll, does it? I'm assuming it includes coaches. Does it also include owners?
I don't think so. Well,
it would be nice if it did, is that the reason?
No, Representative Rukavina, I've heard it stated publicly that neither Mr. Polad nor any of his relatives take a salary for the Twins. I don't know if it's a similar situation with the Vikings, but I suspect the way the bill is set up that if the owner takes a salary, yes, that increment or that portion contributed would be subject, but if they don't, the number is zero. Representative Rubina.
Well, Mr. Chair, do any people with money have anything on the bottom line but zero when they get to the end of their income tax statement?
Representative Rooker.
If they got a good accountant or a good attorney, Mr. Chair.
I suspect that Mr. Polad and Mr. McCombs, accountants and attorneys who are specialists in this area, I am not, unfortunately. Otherwise, why would I be here right now? I know enough to be dangerous, Representative Rukavina, just like you.
Mr. Chair, was that a yes or a no on my question?
They have very good advice from multiple sources, Representative Rukavina. Any further questions for the department? Okay. Does any member of the committee have any questions for either of the teams or local units of government? And if we are able to finish that, then we're going to go through the DE5 amendment. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask the same question of City of St. Paul and Anoka County that I've asked the other folks, both teams and also Hennepin County. And so,
St. Paul first, and you were mentioned first. Come on down. Mr. Smith, welcome back. Please identify yourself for the team. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Smith. With the version of the bill that we have now before us, where we have a clear definition of public infrastructure and project costs, what do you folks estimate the project cost, vis-a-vis the definition in the bill, to be for the St. Paul proposal?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, I'm Matt Smith, the Finance Director. With me is Martha Fuller, the City's Planning and Economic Development Director. I think I'll ask Martha to take at least the first part of the question.
Ms. Fuller, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Our proposal...
Could I identify yourself? I made a mistake. Identify yourself for the tape.
Pardon me. Martha Fuller, Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of St. Paul. Our proposal contemplates an overall total project cost of approximately $520 million.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in your proposal, you indicate that the city would contribute up to $244 million for construction and site costs. Is that correct?
Ms. Fuller?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
Representative Lanning?
So, in effect, you're prepared, if it's $520 million, to contribute more than a third of the cost of the project as defined.
Ms. Fuller?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
Representative Lanning?
Then I wanted to lay that foundation for the question that I've been asking everyone, and that is, at this point, are there any other anticipated infrastructure costs down the road that you would envision, or any problems that you foresee with the project costs as now understood, that the city of St. Paul would be faced with further costs down the road, or that the state might be looked to for additional support to cover other things? Or are you confident that you've captured all of the anticipated projected costs associated with this project?
Ms. Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, members of the committee, our proposal assumes approximately $35 to $45 million as part of that project cost will be necessary for infrastructure. We also contemplate that the city will assume the risk of any cost overrun associated with delivery of the site, so that includes both infrastructure and land assembly. And I believe the short answer to your question is no, we do not anticipate that there will be additional requests for funding at any point down the road associated with land assembly or infrastructure. This is an all-in proposal, if you will, intended to cover all of those site delivery costs.
I have a question for Representative Stang. On page 20, line 16, principal amounts of the bonds for a baseball stadium are limited to $550 million. Okay? We just heard Ms. Fuller say that the costs, including a contingency, are $520 million, of which the twin share would be approximately $170 million, of which earlier in the bill, there is a 25% upfront requirement cash of the twins portion. So that's an additional $42 million. So if you take $520 million, which is the total cost, minus 42, I come up with $478 million rather than $550. So why is it have $550 rather than $478?
Mr. Chair, that actually was my error. I'd put the total cost, and the number would probably be adjusted for the football stadium as well to reflect their number and decrease that number as well. I was intending to...
Okay, well, that'll be in the author's amendment to the amendment tomorrow, and we'll do the same thing for football, I suspect. Any further questions for the City of St. Paul? Representative Lanning?
No.
Next up, Anoka County. Thank you, Ms. Fuller and Mr. Smith. Mr. Novak, welcome back. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Steve Novak, Division Manager, Government Services, Anoka County. I have with me Mr. Terry Johnson, who is the Finance Director, Division Manager for Anoka County.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Novak, you heard the questions I asked the folks from St. Paul. I want to ask you the same questions. In terms of project costs associated with the stadium now, you see the definition in the bill draft that we have before us of public infrastructure costs and also project costs. I believe that you indicated before you envisioned the project to be about $645 million.
The stadium portion of our proposal is $645 million estimated, yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You perhaps heard the Vikings representative, Mr. Kelly, indicate that that was a cost that exceeded their interest in the project. And I take it you're prepared to reevaluate that project cost as we go forward with this.
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, I imagine we would be. I can only tell you we've had conversations on both sides of that ledger sheet. This development started at $695 million, based on a common consultant that's been shared by both us and the Minnesota Vikings.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The project cost, as you now project it to be, are you confident that there are no additional infrastructure needs or costs associated with this project so that you would need to find more money from local sources or from the state of Minnesota in order to complete this project?
Mr. Novak.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, as I think I've said publicly several times before in front of this committee and others, we are absolutely confident that Anoka County is a full equity partner in this proposal with our up to $240 million pledge based on being awarded the project to pay our share or more of the capital cost of this project. I've also stated that the way this project has been designed is part of a larger development in our area, which is actually a 740-acre development. And the increment on that is what was going to help the states pay its share on any one of a number of previous proposals, almost none of which we originally designed, but we've tried to react to.
Representative Lanning, like wrestling with Jell-O, isn't it, Maury? Representative Lanning.
Yeah. So I take it from what you're saying, you're confident that this project cost associated with the stadium is all-inclusive, and you do not anticipate the need of having to come back to the state for additional funding should we move forward with this project.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lang, I'm confident of our full equity share based on an overall development proposal that works. It's not clear to me whether this bill works.
Thank you.
It's clear that our participation is solid, bondable, and works.
Thank you.
Representative Covina.
To that point, then, Senator. But so, is that kind of a roundabout way of telling us that the tax increment on the state's portion isn't going to work without your original 740-acre proposal?
Mr. Novak.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's pretty clear from having sat through days of hearings, not just in this committee but in others, that there's enough frustration to go around on the part of everyone as it relates to finding a solution to this challenge. You know, we've tried to be clear, we've tried to be innovative. The one thing that we're absolutely sure of is that we are a full equity partner with real, true, bondable money to do the capital construction of a $645 million Viking complex that is part of a much larger development that will substantially increase tax base and jobs for the state of Minnesota. The bill in front of us and the various versions of it are not the way we originally designed it, but we had enough flexibility built into our proposal that we've been trying to react to it. So I'm not trying to be anything other than clear about our role in this. What's made it somewhat unclear is, you know, by definition, we've been asked to play a larger, different role in trying to adjust to the governor's proposal and some other adaptations to it in terms of trying to help to create an economic model that pays the state's share. If the state had real cash on the table for their one-third, we have real cash on the table for our one-third. and the negotiation would be with the team to make sure that they had their one-third cash on the table. I am clear about our one-third.
Okay. So I am, Mr. Chair, and along Representative Lanning's line of questioning, then the $645 million cost that you're projecting is just for a stadium, and then you have infrastructure costs on top of that, right? Mr. Johnson or whoever?
Johnson, that includes the infrastructure, doesn't it, for the stadium itself?
Chairman Abrams, Representative Rubina, the project budget of $645 million includes the public infrastructure improvements and site acquisition and so forth, added to the stadium.
So,
Representative Rubina.
Chair, Mr. Johnson, then, was it an Oakland's assumption all the time that that would be the figure then that's used as the one-third, one-third, one-third?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rubina, yes, that's correct.
But you heard Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson yesterday, or Senator Novak, that the Vikings aren't looking at it that way. From what I understand from their testimony on Friday, that the infrastructure part of it, so I wonder what number they're using. Is there anybody on the committee privy to the number that the Vikings might be using up at Anoka County?
I think that Mr. Kelly's testimony was that they have their sights on a less expensive stadium than $645 million, if I can paraphrase him correctly.
Mr. Chair, he said that, but I thought I also heard him say before I left that they also, like the Twins, weren't anticipating, maybe Representative Lanning can help me, they weren't anticipating paying infrastructure the whole time.
No, what I think they said is that they want to make sure that there's no additional environmental and similar sorts of costs, that the one-third was always on the infrastructure, so there's a different definition of what they're calling project costs. So that I would suspect there's going to be less, if in fact the stadium were built in Blaine, there would be less of it, although the water table's high there, so there may be some environmental issues there. But so the Minneapolis and St. Paul sites both probably have some significant environmental issues at some point. Maybe we'll be surprised, but just seeing the railroad tracks, there has to be some PCBs and some other bad stuff that may be fairly easily cleaned up or maybe more difficult. Representative Rubina.
Mr. Chair, I kind of favor the Anoka site because I wouldn't have to drive that far, and there's a lot of rangers I could have a sleepover. I wouldn't have to pay for a hotel room. But anyway, I just want to make sure before Senator Novak leaves them. So Anoka's assuming them, their cost for this total stadium project is, including infrastructure, is $215 million.
Our position, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, has always been, since the county board passed its resolution on a 6-1 vote, up to $240 million. That was based on an earlier projected higher-cost stadium. The reduction was down to $645. And the Minnesota Vikings are fully aware of the proposal. They participated in it. I think maybe what Mr. Kelly was referring to, as everyone would be, is as we work through this process and we find other types of efficiencies, it'd be great to have a lower-priced facility. But the facility has in it a whole variety of things that the Minnesota Vikings had wanted in it, and it was designed to meet those goals.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify, what I hear you saying, though, is what's not clear around this table is the one-third of the state money, that you haven't heard that there's any buy-in to that. I'm assuming when you say this bill doesn't work, it's you may be sure of yours, and there may be some question about the Vikings, but the one-third for the state is not clear in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Houseman, I'm trying real hard not to be unclear, but I understand your question, and let me try to amplify on my answer. Because the only reason my answer may appear to be different is that every version of the bill is slightly different. If the conclusion of the committee or the legislative action is that the local governments are not going to be responsible for helping to create the increment to help the state make its payment, then the size of the district becomes
far less relevant. If the conclusion of the committee is that the state's contribution is going to be tied to an incremental financing plan, then the size of our increment district is very important for our ability to help the state provide its one-third share of the cost. And so we did not design that proposal originally to work in that way, but coming out of the Governor's Commission on Stadiums and also with meetings with the Governor's office, when it became clear that that was the way they wanted to go, we were perfectly happy to go in that way and to try to provide a mechanism that would help the state meet its share through that creation of that increment. Because, as I've said from the very beginning, we're a very different proposal than either baseball park proposal, where you're taking state-of-the-art ballparks and putting them inside existing downtowns. We're using an NFL complex as an economic impetus to create a major economic engine. In order to do that properly and work it around 250 acres of mitigated wetland, we need a master plan development, which we in fact have. And our numbers on that master plan development, we feel, are quite accurate and have been designed not by us but by two major companies who do this for a business, Krauss Anderson and Hammes, and they agree on the figure and the size of the development. That's why that's important to us. So based on your decision, my answer changes. But it doesn't change as it relates to Anoka County's commitment, backed up by a 6-to-1 vote, that we will produce our one-third share of capital costs to build the structure itself.
That's all clear as mud. Representative Mallory.
Mr. Chairman, I might also possibly clarify that embedded in that plan is the fact that these would be tax-exempt bonds, and that's another factor that goes back and forth depending on which way the state decides to go in terms of producing its one-third share.
Now, I don't know who came up with this tax increment or increment idea, but no, it was not representative. Unbelievable. Representative Mallory.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Novak, you said one-third, you're ready to do the one-third of the capital cost, but I'm sure that Mr. Kelly and I think somebody from the Twins said, we're only going to pay one-third of the actual cost of a stadium, and we're not going to pay for the property, we're not going to pay for getting it ready, we're not going to pay for any infrastructure, we're not going to pay for anything except the actual cost of the stadium. If you're ready to pay the one-third, they're not of the capital costs, but they're not going to pay a one-third of the total, and I don't know what the state's going to end up. That seems to be floating around like Muhammad Ali's butterfly, but where is the rest going to come from?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure I caught every word of Mr. Kelly's testimony, although I've heard him testify before. I believe his basic statement was 215 was too high, and based on what they have on the table right now, 215 is too high. But one of the many complications of this process is that as we're drafting and trying to create legislation, all the different parties in different ways are also negotiating their position sort of on the fly. And I think that the pattern here will be similar to what it has been in the past with the XL Center and others, is that we'll ultimately conclude on a basic figure, and it'll be higher or lower than it is now within some reasonable range. And if it gets higher, it'll in all likelihood be because the team wants some extra things added. And that'll be up to you to decide whether that kind of flexibility will be left in the proposal. We're just clear about the fact, which is why we passed the resolution we did, because we knew we'd have difficulty helping you and the team negotiate and didn't feel that that was particularly our role. We wanted to be clear about the fact that Anoka County government was prepared to be a full one-third or whatever partner up to $240 million in capital construction, which would handle a state-of-the-art fixed-dome football complex as measured against other quality NFL football stadiums in the nation.
Representative Mallory.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm still trying to find out you say you'll go with one-third up to 240, but if the team isn't going to go one-third, and I don't know what if the state's going to go one-third, if you're going to stick to the one-third, then somebody's going to be shorts, and we're not going to have the whole package since the team is not going to go one-third on the total costs. So are you going to make it up, or do you expect the state to, or what?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulry, believe me, I cannot predict what you're going to do. I frankly can't predict what the team's going to do either. But it seems as if over the years there's been enough interest on the part of all three parties to want to get this done. It was not us who came up with the one-third, one-third formula. It was the governor of the state of Minnesota. And as is the case with the incremental financing plan for the state's contribution, we have simply tried to adjust to the rules set by other folks as we try to come to grips with what is a pretty significant challenge here that's longstanding in the state of Minnesota. We just simply want to be clear that of the three partners here, we're at the table and we're fully funded. And we're trying to provide help, if we can, for the state and others to get to their one-third. In my opinion, it is a totally manageable and relatively easily done solution to this problem, as long as people want to come to grips with the reality of what it takes to do a project like this and can see the economic benefit. I can see it clearly. Anoka County can see it clearly. I think at times the team has and the state has. And that's going to be a decision you're going to have to make.
You know, Steve, the increment isn't going to be there when you build the stadium. I don't care if you take the entire city of Blaine. It isn't going to be there when you build the stadium. It's going to be economic development over time. You're looking for $30 million bucks a year in order to defease roughly $190 million worth of bonding for the state share. Just isn't going to be there.
Mr. Chairman?
You know, you say to the state, get real. I think it's about time somebody said to Anoka County, get real.
Mr. Chairman, unless our figures are wrong,
for Novak,
a $250 million bond issue, we're looking at roughly a $14 to $16 million a year payment for 30 years, and that's what we'll produce with our 3/4 cent sales tax.
Yeah, but you're going to have negative amortization until there's development, Mr. Novak.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I think there's a number of ways that the timetable can be set for when the bonds are let. And so on and so forth, when the sales tax is enacted.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, you're
Representative Rucavina.
You're assuming on the tax increment part for the state's portion.
Well,
and
that's what's the problem, you know.
And that's but isn't it, Mr. Chair, isn't it just as much of a problem for Minneapolis and St. Paul as it is for Anoka County?
Well, no, Representative Rucavina, it's not, because you're dealing with baseball, which is not sold out, which they claim they're going to increase the payroll, and which you can categorize it as rent. You know, maybe you deal with the Anoka County, you know, I think it, in the bill it deals with Anoka County the same way, in which it's rent, and there may be some clawback or something for the Vikings. But, you know, I'm just telling you that there just is not increment there, at least initially, no matter how you define the project area, in order to make the $14, $16, $18 million a year payment. It just isn't there. You know, I hate to be the one who, you know, I hear the boosterism, yeah, we want to get this done, we want to build stadiums, et cetera. You know, somebody here has to say, how? How's this going to work? And, you know, frankly, I have wrestled with this 20 different ways, Mr. Novak, and there just isn't increment there that is not going to be in a negative amortization situation, at least for football. And then you're going to have the question, are the Vikings going to do the guarantee that's in make the rent payment that's in here, or just view this as more than their third? Or however you want to categorize it. Just isn't there. Just isn't there.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rucavina,
please explain it to this, you know, somewhat simple-minded guy at this end of the table here, how it's there then in Minneapolis or in St. Paul.
It's simple, because currently the Twins sell 1.9
million seats a year, and frankly, even that's a papered number with all their promotions and giveaways, et cetera. And at least during the first few years, there's going to be a whole lot less of that going on simply because there's going to be a more demand for tickets. So you're going to generate more money when you go from 1.9 a year to 2.8, 2.9 million fans a year. First. Second, you're going to have a velocity of concessions that come forward from that. Third, there's no payroll cap in baseball, and if you're going to believe the Twins, there's some flexibility there. So there is some increment, for lack of a better word, that can be grabbed there, that the Twins may be willing to sign a lease and saying, yeah, there's going to be something there, and it may, you know, ultimately be a business decision. Contrast that to the National Football League. There is going to be a few thousand more seats available, maybe 5,000 more seats available, but they currently sell out 64,000 seats every game. And it's not papered. It is a little for the exhibition games, for the regular season games. They're all sold. There'll be some marginal increase in concessions because we heard Mr. Kelly say there's going to be more variety available. Yeah, there might be a little bit there. There's not going to be a whole lot there. But the main thing, increased attendance, you're not going to get much of an increment. Player salaries, there's a minimum salary cap and a maximum salary cap in the NFL. You're not going to have a 20% expansion of the payroll in the NFL. So that whole idea we're going to get sales tax and we're going to get increased player salary income tax, it's just not there for football. It's just not there.
Okay.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, now I've got it. And regardless of whether this was in Bloomington and sitting on top of the Mall of America or...
doesn't matter what city.
It doesn't make any difference where it is. The football portion of this bill, in your opinion, never works. And then there's the tax increment for the baseball, which may work, but is terrible tax policy to a lot of us. So, again, tomorrow I'm looking for you for leadership, Mr. Chair. I'll take a minority role and roll a few bombs over at you. But.
Well, you know, the you know, your members can do with this as they want to. They may want to get the bill out of here. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, Representative Rukavina, but. The other thing that the football is built on is 50 developable acres adjacent to the stadium, which would currently have an increment value of zero, is going to develop. But I'm going to tell you, in 2009 or 2010, when they open the stadium, that those 50 acres are going to not really have all that much increment, Representative Rukavina, because their development will not have occurred on that land yet. It may over time. There may be something there over time, but on day one, when they flip the switch to the new lights on in the new stadium, there isn't going to be much increment there for the first two or three years. Unless I'm really missing it, Mr. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, I would argue that you're seriously missing it. This is in the middle of a major growth lane, both commercial and residential, and as long as we're allowed to. Design it as part of a master plan, which is why the acreage of the plan is critical to us if we're going to be responsible for the increment. We will produce those kind of numbers. Now, our original plan was something apparently people really didn't like, which was to capture both the income and sales tax increment, but not with zero as the base. We did a projection based on how this land will develop without the Minnesota Vikings complex and a projection of what it will be with the Minnesota Vikings complex. Following the rules of the game, which again we did not set, which is no net loss of state general revenues, we're only capturing the increment on the growth between the base development and the development with the Vikings. So I would, with all due respect, not agree with your point as it relates to this development. It will be substantial.
Well, who bears the risk, Mr. Novak? The state, the team, or Anoka County? Who bears the risk on the increment?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Does the team?
Mr. Chairman, again, in our minds, that was a totally negotiable item based on who got the revenues. And in our original proposal, which has never been put into draft bill form, was in draft bill form but never been introduced because we went with the governor's vehicle, not our own, we had a model that we were willing to take on a lot of the risk as long as we got the revenue. I mean, you know, we're coming off a structure we did not set, the Governor's Stadium Commission. I think one of the things that the legislators should at least consider is that there's 87 counties in this state. I don't know how many thousand cities, but there's a lot of them.
And the criteria that was set forth in this Governor's Commission on Stadiums as we searched for a solution on the Twins and the Vikings was, is anybody out there interested in taking this on for the Minnesota Vikings? One local government showed up. And we showed up big time in terms of our commitment on capital construction. But, and I agree with you on this, Mr. Chairman, with the state making the decision not to put hard cash on the table and to go with an incremental plan because of various types of pledges and so forth, we adjusted our plan to that model. That's all we've done. And we put together a program that actually would address it successfully if allowed to be developed the way we've designed it. And it's not a government plan. It's a private sector plan by people who do this for a living. That's all we've done. And so we're doing our best to adjust to models we did not create.
Representative Cavina.
Mr. Novak, if it was a perfect world and the bill was amended again to give you a 740-acre development area that you had based your numbers on, explain to me then how you think that the chair is wrong and that it would produce the increment. I mean, would there be shopping malls, little strip malls going up in this area before the stadium opened? Would there be other types of, stores developing?
Mr. Chairman,
Novak,
first of all, I want to make it clear I would never suggest that the chair was wrong. We just have a floating series of difference of opinions on how to get to the goal. But when I gave my prepared testimony before the committee at the previous hearing, there was a 31-page document of slides that we went through, and that lays it out in quite substantial detail in terms of what the total master development is. And it's a $1.5 billion development, $645 million of which is the stadium complex. But the stadium complex is also condominiumized and taxed, as are the specialty shops, retail, housing, commercial, and other kinds of things that are built into the full development. Almost $1 billion of that is private development.
But does it happen, Mr. Chair, Senator Novak, does it happen prior to the stadium?
It happens coexistent, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina. It's front-loaded because it goes from the stadium out. So when the stadium opens, a lot of the commercial development by design opens with it. The majority of it opens with it, but it's a 15-year build-out for all of it to be fully incorporated.
And so the
it's front-loaded from the stadium out.
So then the chair is right to a degree. It's going to take you that a while for the increment to build up to be able to pay the state's third.
Mr. Novak.
It won't happen right away.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be accurate but manageable.
Representative Lanning, your questions answered?
Well, to a certain extent, Mr. Chair, and to the point that Representative Mullery was raising, I think if you look at Section 5 on page 4, Part C, as you've already explained, Mr. Chairman, this is what I understood the teams to be accepting as what's included in project costs. Now, if that's not the case, I'd like to know that from the teams because I think it's very important for us to be clear about project costs here and what the different parties say is included in that. And in fact, Mr. Chairman, if I might make a suggestion to all parties here, is I would like to see a one-pager from all three sites that would be signed off by the respective teams as to what is the best project cost estimate at this point, what are the items included in that project cost, and what is the local community prepared to commit, as we've had St. Paul and Anoka County have made those statements. I think for the sake of everyone, it would be good for us to have that on the table.
Well, the bill's author, I'm sure, will be working on that this afternoon. Now we're going, Representative Lincheski, are we ready to hear from the bill author yet, or do you have a question?
Kind of question for
well, we asked the Hennepin County questions yesterday, or on Friday. If you want to bring them down, Representative Lincheski.
Well, no, I just, Representative Lanning, I thought, did a good job of asking Anoka and St. Paul to tell us the dollar amount, and then if there's other new costs that no one's thought of, are they going to pay for them? And I leaned over and asked Representative Lanning, what did Hennepin say they'd throw in? And, you know, we heard St. Paul say $244 million, and we heard Anoka say $240. Did Hennepin?
Minneapolis is up to $7 million, Representative Lincheski.
Well, I thought Hennepin should give us their number. I thought Hennepin should just give us their number, but maybe you want to take that testimony later.
Well, Mr. Ufers, why don't you come down and answer Representative Lincheski's question?
Seven.
Mr. Ufers, welcome back. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Ufer for Hennepin County, financial consultant. Just a little bit of background before I speak to what the presentation said last week. The proposal submitted to the Governor's Stadium Commission that the board actually voted on had a $308 million tax-exempt county bond issue authorized for the project. The total project cost was $535 million. The estimated construction cost of that component was $490 million. And working with the legislation as it was being developed, relative to team share, we had changed our team share assumption from $120 million to $164, recognizing that still will require some work in terms of definitions as to what does the one-third team share apply to. And indeed, we anticipate being told that by the authority once it's created. They actually end up negotiating the one-third, as I understand it, under this bill. And we assume we would be told what that amount would be.
So it's one third of 492, and who's going to pay the other $37 million? Well, we know who's paying $7 million. Who's paying the other $30 million?
Mr. Chairman, the county would be issuing bonds on a county-wide tax basis. So Minneapolis would pay its share. Suburban would, Hennepin County would pay its share to support those bonds on county-wide taxes. And the taxes would be limited to 130% of debt service for whatever the bond issue size.
And no taxes would be general obligation, correct, Mr. Ufer?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
And any representation in the past that Hennepin County can issue general obligation bonds not backed by county property taxes was incorrect. Am I correct, Mr. Ufer?
You are correct, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? Well, now I think we're ready for you, Representative Stang. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we have the DE5 amendment.
Do you wish to present it, or do you wish to have Gene or Joel? You can proceed how you want to. I'd like to be out of here within 20 minutes, if that's possible.
Mr. Chair, why don't I quickly go over the changes from the previous amendment, and then I'll probably have Mr. Michaels go over the changes to the TIF stuff.
Please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, Section 1, to address some of the issues and concerns raised, we added more oversight of the MSA. The Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Government is used to oversee the activities, and the MSA is required to report to them. Go over the changes. If you turn to page 4, section 5, as we've had a pretty good discussion on already, we define project costs. We do take out the unrelated public infrastructure, environmental mitigation, incidental to site preparation out of the project cost. To address some of the issues that have also been raised here. Section 7 on page 5, subdivision 3, the acquisition of property, we took out the condemnation rights of the authority. The authority would no longer have the ability to do that. Page 9, section 8, subdivision 3, the team contribution, we changed that. We eliminate the language related to the naming rights and the personal seat license. We now require the team contribution still be a third of the total project cost, of which of that third, 25% of that has to be upfront cash, and the rest can be remainder payments and annual payments. Page 10, subdivision 6, we put in the bill Major League Baseball guarantee language. This language was language that I believe was in the 2002 bill, Mr. Chair, that you yourself had some involvement in crafting. We have that specific language for Major League Baseball. Subdivision 7 on page 11 deals with just a league guarantee from the National Football League, and that's why there's a difference between the two, is because the Major League Baseball had somewhat been already worked out in a prior agreement. Page 12, subdivision 15, the access to books and records. We tighten this language to assure that the authority has access. They must have access before. We basically said they would seek a provision, but here we require they have access. Going on to page 13, subdivision 16, the Finance Commissioner and Legislative Coordinating Commission approval. We've added this in direct response to the issues and concerns raised by members that there's no legislative oversight once a deal is reached. Require the Finance Commissioner to approve it, but we also require the Legislative Coordinating Commission to also approve the final agreement before it.
On this point, Representative Rukavina.
I want to ask Representative Stang what it means there on line 13, or 12 and 13 and 14, and what that does then.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, there's some question as to whether this would be an unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority to, because it's an absolute approval, so to a subset of the legislature. So in order to be sure that the rest of the act could remain valid, if that provision were found unconstitutional, that severability clause is put in there. It's the same language that was used in the financial assistance package to Northwest Airlines back in 1991.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, you and I, a few others around the table, were here then, and the package did come back to the legislature for full approval, and I assume because nobody questioned whether or not it was unconstitutional. But if somebody did want to question that, basically what this means then, Representative Stang, is not much, doesn't mean anything.
Well, Representative Rukavina, I think what it means is that if, let's say, the commission turned it down, somebody could sell or sue and then get it approved because there is no approval necessary of the LCC, is what I think it means. Representative Mullery? Well,
I guess I was wondering, and that same thing, if the commission, or what if the commission approves it and some taxpayer challenged that, then it could go through. If they turn it down, then, like you say, somebody could. Isn't there a way that if it is unconstitutional that it could be a legislative session or something like that, a one day? Or
that's up to members, Representative Mullery. If you have a different idea, I'm sure that this committee will deal with it.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Rickerson?
I think the chair's scenario, Representative Mullery, is more prone to be the correct one, and you know, the other way to do this with some type of oversight is to change the makeup of this board, which I still don't understand why we're creating it instead of using like the Metro and Sports Council or whatever, but let's change the makeup, Representative Mullery, so that the legislative appointments are doubled instead of one each from the Speaker, the Majority Leader, the Minority Leaders, to have two each. And bring down the gubernatorial appointments from six then to two, and still have the chair being appointed by the governor. And then, in a sense, at least in some sense, there is some legislative input. But basically, now, Representative Stang, what you're trying to address here is unaddressed, I guess, or unaddressed or undressed by lines 12 through 15, and we still. Like I said last Friday, Mr. Chair, we're just writing a blank check to somebody, and I don't know who that somebody is.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow, Representative Rukavina. Representative Stang.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Rubin, I understand the concerns you're expressing, but I mean the alternative is to have this come back before the legislature again, and the difficulty with that obviously is if you negotiate a deal and you come back here for approval, you have to go through this entire process and assume none of those items are going to change through this process, because if any of those items are changed that were negotiated, it throws the whole deal out of whack. So we're trying to address that to the greatest extent possible. We've added people to the MSA. We added legislative appointments to the MSA. We have the Legislative Commission on Metro Government overseeing the MSA, so they have to report to them, and the LCC giving a final approval, and discussions too. It's been indicated that just having this requirement, even the constitutional questions, that the bond houses may not issue those bonds if there is an LCC approval, whether or not it's constitutional or not. So there's some, I mean, to the greatest extent possible, aside from requiring this to go through the legislative process again, I don't know what else we can do. And on top of that, though, the legislature still has the ability next session, if the deal is worked out and it's not something that's acceptable, legislation could still be introduced and we could go through the process of stopping that process. So there, you could have the reverse effect, almost like a reverse referendum, where we still have the legislative authority next session. If it appears to be a bad deal, any legislator could introduce a bill to stop the process.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cavino.
Representative Stang, we haven't moved any farther further than we were last Friday, because you still, you know, I don't want it to come back to the legislature. I just want some legislative input. You know, I feel like Congress giving up the power to declare war, and we're giving up the power to set tax policy in this state. And, you know, that's all I want. I mean, if this bill left here saying, here's what we're paying a year for the Twin Stadium, here's what we're paying a year for the Viking Stadium, here's how we're going to raise that money to pay for it, I wouldn't care if they built the Taj Mahal. I don't really, or where they built it. But that's not what this bill says yet.
Well, and Mr. Chair,
Representative
Gavina, I want to have as much legislative input and oversight as possible. If you have ideas on how to do this in the structure, I'm more than, I mean, we've tried to figure out ways. There's some issues, obviously, with the constitutionality of the final approval. But if you have additional suggestions on how we can do that, I'm very open to doing that. I think everyone around the table wants as much legislative input and oversight in this as possible. I don't know. We've looked at many different options, and I don't know what other options we may have, but I'm certainly open to them if you have additional suggestions.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cavina.
My suggestions usually aren't adopted by the majority, but I have some, and you know, all I'm asking for, though, is give us a dollar amount we're going up to, and give us a tax of how we're going to raise it before it leaves. You know, I'd like it before it leaves this committee, but if that's not possible, it really should be there before it leaves Ways and Means, and because, you know, I mean, when it gets to the floor, Representative Stang, the Republicans have been great at all of the spending bills this year of offering 10 times more amendments than we are and arguing them for 10 hours, 10 times longer. So I hate to see you beat up like you know, some of the other members have been beat up on their bills this session.
Representative Dorman.
On that point, Mr. Chair, Representative Stang, as I listened to this little bit in some prior committees, I thought that, as I understood it, maybe I was wrong, but I thought I kept hearing people say, well, we'll add that in taxes, we'll add that amount in taxes. Did something change there, or have you added these amounts somewhere, or is that what we're going to do tomorrow? I mean, I just don't feel like I even know what I'm voting on yet.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, the issue with the Vikings, we don't have the specific numbers on the tip. We don't have those numbers yet. I wish I could give you those numbers, but Department of Revenue was before us today basically indicating the same thing. I don't know what I can do about that, but we certainly are trying to get as accurate numbers as we can. In relation to the Minnesota Twins, the Twins have talked about, and we've had discussions about an amendment related to a specific dollar amount where there's a guaranteed for doing a period of 5 years, and you have a guaranteed payment from the state, and if it doesn't generate that much, the team is responsible for it. So there is some language that we can put in there specifically for the Minnesota Twins part of this.
Representative Mancheski.
Mr. Chair, I had a question on a couple subdivisions back. I didn't know if you, I know.
Why don't we let Representative Stang finish his presentation? He's all the way to page 15, okay. And then we'll certainly go back. Representative Stang.
I should add, Mr. Chair, on Section 9, the place of amusement, the tax, that's something that I don't believe the local units of government expressed issue in having, so we may look at removing that to address Representative Lanchesky's concern on that issue. Let's see. Well, that brings us, Mr. Chair, then, to the state contribution portion. And if I could, I'm not sure if Mr. Michaels or would want to go through that to explain the changes in that provision.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this state tax increment provision has several different features compared with the original bill or the latest prior delete everything amendment. Essentially, the way this works is, as you see in Subdivision 1, the team would enter into a rent obligation with the authority, and that rent obligation would be set based on an estimate of the amount of increment that we generated under the formula. The team would be obligated to pay that rent regardless of, you know, the amount of the tax increment that's generated, and that's the essentially that rent payment would then be pledged to and would pay the bonds that are issued. By doing that, the state tax amounts are not actually directly pledged to or really don't go to pay the bonds, and so the hope is that that would avoid the three-fifths issue that was discussed earlier. Essentially, the way this works is the team would then apply to the Department of Revenue for a refund of the incremental taxes. There are a few differences in the way those incremental taxes are calculated compared with the previous provision. Probably the most significant thing is the indexing of the baseline for inflation. As noted before, a one-year amount for the baseball team would be used based on 2003. The second, I guess the other thing to note is that the computation is somewhat simpler. It does not involve withholding tax, but instead the Department of Revenue would make a comparison with the amount of the player payroll, and it's just the player payroll that's involved here, so it's not the other ancillary employees of the team that would be involved. The Department of Revenue would estimate the amount of income tax that was paid in 2003 by both the Minnesota-based franchise and the visiting team, and it would come up with a percentage for that amount. And that would be essentially the calculation that would be used going forward in the future. It's that same percentage that would be then multiplied times the team's payroll for the current year minus the baseline, and then it would be multiplied times the percentage. So you'll note that that gives them increment that's attributable both to the team's players and the visiting players to the extent that they pay income tax. The sales tax calculations, aside from this inflation adjustment issue, are essentially as they were in the prior version. Wages are defined by regard to the Social Security Act, so it's Medicare wages. That's a new feature. I think that basically captures the principal policy difference. The one thing that I think should be noted apropos of the discussion earlier about the football team is that although this does capture sales in the stadium district, you should note that really is and has been in all of these drafts is for sales that occur by vendors and concessionaires on days when there are professional football-related events. So this is not just a general capture of all retail sales in that district. It's instead just by vendors and concessionaires on game days. And that does you know, affect dramatically the potential yield of this district. And that's been the way it's been throughout, with the exception that, as Mr. Gephardt noted before, it didn't even include the stadium district in earlier versions of the draft.
Representative Stang.
Mr. Chair, I will add, on page 20, the numbers you referred to, as you mentioned, that was different. There were blank lines on page 20, lines 16 and 17. We added the numbers to set a limit, and we'll be adjusting those numbers to take out the minimum team upfront contribution that wasn't factored in to those numbers. So they would be roughly for the Twins, would be for a baseball stadium, would be $478 million, as you pointed out, and roughly $600 million for football. And then, Mr. Chair, there, I forgot one other provision. Section 9 and the local tax part of it, as I mentioned, we'll work on that place of amusement language and probably delete that reference. But we did remove the language by Representative Clinzing and just made it clear that the general sales tax, use tax, is subjected to a general referendum. So, Mr. Chair, that is essentially the changes that we put in.
There is one other change, and that is that the stadiums will be exempt from the local option taxes that are currently in effect. You got that in there, Joel? And that gets around the city of Minneapolis being able to collect their 3% tax within the stadium, and it's similar to the Metrodome.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and as a matter of fact, Representative Stain had actually incorporated that feature in an earlier version, but if you look on page 5, at the very bottom of the page and on the top of page 6, this language mirrors the language that's in the Metrodome law, and essentially says the only taxes that will apply at the stadium are the state general sales tax, which of course is under the subject of caps under the increment provision, and the local taxes that are imposed to help finance the stadium. You'd have to exclude that so that the admissions tax that would be imposed could actually apply. So then the Minneapolis local sales tax or the St. Paul sales tax or similarly the restaurant amusement tax in Minneapolis would not apply here. And then it also makes it clear that that tax exemption does not count.
Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stang, do you intend perhaps by tomorrow or something to put I see where you've got a cap for the issuance of the bonds, which are issued by that authority, or the Metropolitan Council, right? But are you intending to put a cap on as far as what the state's contribution will be based on these numbers that are in front of us here?
Representative Stang.
Mr. Chair, we can look to see if that's been done before and break it down more of the state portion as well as local. Are you just looking for essentially the public?
I'm just saying,
Representative
Mr. Chair, that if indeed the state's obligated for up to a third of $550 million or $650 million, should be in there. It should specify at least that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rubina,
Representative Stang.
Since the Met Council is issuing it, we probably have to combine the local portion with the state's portion because I'd assume they'd be issued possibly together. But I can see if we can work on language to do that.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Stang, on page 5 of the DE5 on tax exemptions and lines the last of 17 and then 18 and 19, do I understand that then that all of these properties actually would be subject to, say, their fair contribution for a school district excess operating levy referendum or other similar things, or am I incorrect?
Representative Stang?
Maybe Mr. Michael could.
Mr. Michael, could you help out Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, members of the committee, the language on line on page 5, lines 17 and following, relates to special assessments where there's actual benefit that's involved. This would be similar to an assessment for a street improvement or curb and gutter or sewer and water and that sort of thing. It would not. And this language is mirrors very closely the Metrodome's property tax exemption. It would not authorize an ad valorem type levy for school debt or operating or that sort of thing.
Any other questions? Representative Muller.
Mr. Chairman, that language, what about... I guess I'm looking at both with regard to special assessments or under Chapter 444075. What if it's a sewer line or some kind of a major sewer that happens to run by the property but is of no benefit to the property? Under those chapters, I think both of them they can assess it, but in especially I'm thinking of Anoka County in this situation. Even though it would be no benefit whatsoever to the stadium, would that could they do it,
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulry, I don't believe that they could, and as a matter of fact, the language again. Patterned after the Metrodome language, makes it tries to make it clear if you look on lines 21 through 24 that if there's a benefit for the property in another use other than as a stadium, that's not even supposed to be considered, which I think under normal special assessment law under some circumstances that you could take that into account, so it wouldn't. So I think that's an attempt to address that general concern that you raised.
Further questions? Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for the author. I'm trying to get some information right now, Representative Stang, but I noticed in the bill that there's an exemption for the Met Council review. And I'm just wondering, I can see why that would be the case for a lot of what the Met Council is able to do, because I would imagine you don't want to have some conflict taking place there, but are you aware that this exemption from council review, which is page 8, line 15, it also exempts a process called Metropolitan Significance Review. Are you aware of that process, and did you intend to take that process that citizens have now out of, did you intentionally exempt that, or were you just unaware of it?
Representative Stang.
Mr. Chair, Representative Chesky, no, I was not aware. I'm not aware of the Metro Significance Review, so if there's clarifying language there to protect.
And Representative Stang, does that apply just to the stadium or to the $1 billion additional in Anoka County? Because I can think of a $1 billion project in Bloomington that had to go through Metropolitan Significance.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Stang, if I could just tell you a little bit about it, I would hope you'd put it back in. I know that there are many legislators who don't like the Metropolitan Council to be involved in certain things for various reasons when they can do that. But the Metropolitan Significance Review process is one in which there are three ways that this review can take place. An affected local unit of government can request one. Citizens via petition can request one. Or the Met Council itself can request this process. And it hasn't been used very often. And usually when it is used, the project still goes forward, but it gets another look. And some of the examples I would have for you is the Mall of America went through this process. I mean, and that's a private facility with no public funds, but it went through the process. The Burnsville Amphitheater went through the process. Representative Haas fought an amphitheater in his area, went through that process. I asked the lobbyist for Minneapolis. He's not sure. He's checking, but I think the Target Center went through that process. The committee staff, Mr. Tremere, believes that the second airport concept, which was turned down by the legislature, went through that process. I'm not sure about Excel, and I've asked Mr. Lester if the Metrodome did. He's not sure, but right now the Met Council staff is checking on all those. But those are some examples for members who have not heard of this process. They are large projects like stadiums and amphitheaters and airports and Malls of America that allow the Met Council to look at basically the burden on metro-wide systems And those systems are transportation systems, noise, open space. Airports would be an obvious example there. But nonetheless, it is a vehicle for an affected local unit of government that is having something thrust on it to say, not kill it, but take a deeper, longer look. Or for citizens, in my city's case, 5,000 residents signed a petition to ask the Met Council to look at the impact of noise from the Burnsville Amphitheater directed onto the Bloomington neighborhoods. So that's another vehicle. And then the council itself could say, you know, this is of such big significance, like in the Mall of America case, we want to take a look at this. Your bill says none of that can take place, and I just hope you would look, and I'm working on an amendment on it, and hopefully you just incorporate it, but just take a look at what that means. It doesn't give that unelected body an ability to stop the project, but it adds another layer of looking through something that is metro significant, and I think that all of these stadiums, it would be hard to argue that they are not of metro significance, so I hope you consider putting that back in your bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucheski, we'll see if we can get language and just incorporate it to our amendment if we have one tomorrow.
Thank Representative Rukavina.
Not to this.
Oh, no, Mr. Chair. Any further questions?
Yeah.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, for you or maybe for somebody from Revenue or Mr. Michaels, and I actually kind of hate to do this to myself and my friends, but doesn't the liquor tax go down from 9.5% to 6.5% next year?
I believe on December 31st, 2005, there's a reduction in the liquor tax and the car rental tax. And when it was done, we thought, to conform with the streamline model, and there are other ways to do it, and I don't necessarily think that they no longer conform. So, latest recollection.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't have to let rental tax on motor vehicles expire.
We do
to be in compliance. We do need to let the sales, the extra sales tax on alcohol vehicles expire. Otherwise, we would be out of compliance.
Mr. Chair, do we get kicked into Canada then if we're out of compliance? I'd like to go. Is that what happened?
State of Superior, Representative.
So why do we have to adhere to it? So the sales tax on car rentals, what would that free up, Ms. Dolphin, Mr. Chair?
Well, we have Dr. Wilson who can help you with that, but it's a lot and it's almost totally exported.
Well, the liquor tax?
No, the car tax is almost, you know, half the lodging tax in the state is paid for by non-Minnesota residents. And I would suspect that somewhere over 75% of the car rental tax is paid by people outside the state. Paul, you help us out. What is 1% on car rentals cost? Let's see if there are any lobbyists for the industry in the room.
Statewide. 6.2%
would raise $15 million in 2007. So 1% would be about $2.4 million. Do a metro discount, so it's probably about $1.8 million in the metro, I would suspect.
87%
of that. 87%
of the metro. $2.1 million in metro.
No.
A little lodging tax.
But Mr.
Little,
Chair,
little rental car tax.
Back to the liquor tax. I mean, that must be a significant amount of dollars when
it's a lot of money.
9.5% to 6.5%, and I wasn't being facetious. I mean, so what if we don't go along with the streamlined sales tax? They can't kick us out of the union, right? I mean,
well, the benefits of being part of streamline is important.
Mr. Chair, on that
Representative
point,
Dorman,
you know, we've got the same problem with fur clothing,
yeah.
But didn't we convert that to a
next size tax?
Yeah, you could do the same thing.
Oh, sure.
So you could get around that.
And the rules are different for on sale versus off sale too. You can do that differently. Any further questions? Here's where we are, members. Get your amendments to me. I would appreciate it. So we have copies for everybody, so that it's revised correctly. Unless Representative Stang has some large changes, it'll just be an amendment to the DE-5 amendment. The DE-5 amendment will be posted on the committee's webpage, And it is my intention tomorrow morning, beginning shortly after 9 a.m., to mark the bill up and to take votes. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, will small oral amendments be in order? I mean, they're okay, I think.
Representative Rukavina, I have never ruled an amendment out of order, and I don't intend to now, but it would certainly be helpful so that we don't have a situation where the reviser doesn't know precisely how to revise the bill, that it be written. But if you have an oral amendment reading through the bill, we will certainly work through it, Representative Rukavina.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I have a big written amendment, too, but I was hoping to hold it close to my chest. But if you promise me that you'll hold it close to your chest, I'll give it to you.
I want a couple of things, Representative Rukavina. I want to make sure that it is drafted to the DE-5 amendment so that it works, number one. And number two, I would like to make sure that there are 50 copies of the amendment available. If you want to share it with me, that would be fine. It will be under the cone of silence. If you would prefer, Representative Rukavina to keep it hidden in your papers, that's fine too, Representative Rukavina. I just, you know, normally I try to go through a bill with amendments relating to the same subject matter being dealt with at the same time because members are thinking about the subject matter. I don't like going back and forth.
I see Representative Earhart's looking nervous at me. It doesn't have anything to do with Edina, Representative Earhart.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, I'm curious about the motion that, you know, I don't think anybody's made one yet. I wonder if they're going to make it. But are the team license plates still in the DE-5? And if they are?
I don't believe the license plates are in here. Or are they, Joel?
Mr. Chair.
They've been in and out. Representative Stang.
I believe they are, but Representative Queasley actually had language. Either we'll remove it or he says there's a process in which if the issue is whether it should go to transportation, Representative Queasley said there's a way, the language he could put in place which would not require it to be in. If it's an issue yet, we will delete that provision from the bill.
Representative Mallory.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the license plates, when I saw it before, it didn't have an exemption from that Queasley law from about 2 years ago that requires, I believe, a statewide study as to how many will be sold and an upfront bond or something like that. I remember there's something like that. How is that dealt with in here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahler, that's what I was referring to. Representative Queasley says he has language to basically put the requirement in place. If it's extensive, and we may just delete that part of the bill altogether.
Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there's a policy decision about license plates in here, I'd more likely want to see the bill.
No, Representative Earhart. You want it, you can have it. We can go right to the floor, and we can send it to your committee right now, Representative Earhart. With that, the meeting is adjourned.